You're all here. Thank you for coming. I'm going to do roll call. Do we need to do roll call again?
No, okay. Not on that part. We're going to do roll call when we open the regular meeting.
Okay, so let's have a report out of
just, first of all, there were no reportable actions taken. We only took item number one, and for the record, I'd like to make sure that recusal of Mayor Pro Tem Lee from that first item is noted for the record. And I'll let you state the reason.
I'm assuming it's because I have a contractual obligation through the county.
That is correct.
And I'm going to have to ask for the information on our flag salute before we get started on that, because I didn't get that with me today, this evening. Thank you.
At this point in time, it would be appropriate to close the special meeting and open the regular meeting.
All right. So we're going to close our special meeting, and we're going to convene our regular meeting. It is 6:43, and this is the City Council meeting of Monday, September 15th, 2014. And I wonder if we could have roll call, please.
Here.
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 Yes, here.
I'm also here. And what I'd like to do, and I'm going to do this a little differently because I've discovered we're always finding out new things about Brown Act and First Amendments and Second Amendments and all kinds of things. So I cannot insist that any of you stand for a moment of silence, but I can welcome you to stand for a moment of silence with us if you like. And what I'd like us to do tonight is to think on something that we're thankful for this evening, and then we will have the flag salute, and Chloe Briley is going to come up after our moment of silence. So if you'd like to join me and stand, you're welcome to do that. So I'm just going to read a little bit before Chloe gets up here. Chloe is 11 years old. She's a sixth grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. Her favorite subject is math, and she wants to continue with studying that. She likes living on the Central Coast because she can go to the beach and she enjoys softball. Chloe is accompanied this evening by her principal, Carol Littlefield Halfman, who I know because she used to teach math at Judkins, I think.
She did.
Yeah, our kids all had her. They were the smart kids. She is now the new principal at Fairgrove Elementary School. And then Chloe's teacher is Ryan Young. And her mother's here, too. Is there anybody else from the family who's here with Chloe tonight?
Her little brother.
Her little brother. What's his name?
Noah.
Noah's here as well. Okay. So would you like to come forward, Chloe? And then after you're done, we'll have you come up to the front for something else. Thank you, Chloe and family in Fairgrove. We've done our closed session announcements, so we're going to do our agenda review now. Oh, well, wait, do we have a closed session announcement from the last meeting?
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council members, members of the public, on Monday, August 18th, Council met in closed session on several items listed on the agenda, and there were no reportable actions taken on any of them.
Thank you very much. We'll do the agenda review, and this is the time at which the City Council reviews the order of business to be conducted, and we can receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. Any changes from the council or staff?
I'll move we accept the agenda as published.
Moved by Councilmember Nichols. Do we have a second?
I'll recommend we change the agenda.
Okay, let's hear that.
I would say we move item 8, which is the appointments to the Planning Commission, and item 9, appointments to Parks and Rec, up further into our agenda, like maybe having them after our presentation.
Be great to have them sit through this whole agenda, though, because it's a really full agenda, and they might as well
cruel.
Be informed.
It would be cruel.
Like all the rest of the people out there have to sit through it.
I would second that.
Okay. So we actually believe, yeah, we vote on the second motion first. So we have a motion by Council Member Marshall, a second by Council Member Bright, and we can do that in a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'm going to say no, because we have people here who are waiting for lots of things. So that's carried 4-1. And so we will amend the agenda, and you were suggesting we move agenda items, what was it?
8 and 9.
8 and 9 up to before
item 2. After
item 2. Okay. Did we do that okay?
If that's
City
legal.
Attorney?
We're just confirming the vote, whether it was 3-2 or 4-1.
It was 4-1.
So,
I believe.
Nichols.
Oh, sorry.
I was in favor of it.
You're in favor. Okay. So it was 4-1.
Just one.
I was the opposed.
I know you were. Yeah. Thank
yeah.
You.
Nobody else opposed. Okay. So 8 and 9 are going to go after 2.
After 1.
Okay. So you'll all get to meet our new commissioners. First, so what we've done our agenda review, then we've agreed that. So the public know what's going on, since there are quite a few of you out there tonight. We'll start with our ceremonial calendar, and then after that we'll have public communications. And I do have some blue slips. You are not required to complete one of these. It helps our city clerk, because then she knows how to spell your name properly, and she has a record of what you spoke on. But there is no requirement for you to do this. It just helps us with organization. So we will have, after we have our proclamation, we'll have public communications. And at that point, anyone who wants to speak on anything that is not on the agenda can come forward, and I'll call those who requested to speak first. And because we're really busy tonight, I'd ask that you line up to speak so that we don't waste time on that. And then after that, we'll move to each of the items on the agenda, and I will give you an opportunity also to speak before those items. So first we start with public communications on anything within the jurisdiction of the council, and then we'll allow you to speak on any of the individual items on the agenda also. So let's do our ceremonial calendar. We have a proclamation declaring October 2014 as Filipino American History Month. So we have someone here to get this, don't we? Is there someone here this evening? Oh, good. Okay, good. So maybe I'll come out there and read this, and then afterwards we'll have the whole council gathered behind. This is the proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring the month of October, 2014 as Filipino American History Month. Whereas the earliest documented proof of Filipino presence in the continental United States falls on October 18, 1587, when the first Filipinos to set foot in North America arrived in the Morro Bay area on board a Spanish galleon, and efforts must continue to promote the study of Filipino-American history and culture, so mandated in the mission statement of the Filipino-American National Historical Society, because the roles of Filipino-Americans and other country, in witness whereof I have hereunto, set my hand and caused the seal of the City of Grover Beach to be affixed this 15th day of September 2014. So why don't the council come out and let's have a photo with all of us? And this has been a really important celebration for us in Grover for many, many years. And I know there's a history, and I'm hoping you'll share that when you stand up to talk. And I think the Filipinos have been here longer than the rest of us. So you're welcoming us. So thank you. And let's have a photo. Bill's pretty old. Whoops. You said that, not me.
Nice job.
Did you have some remarks that you wanted to make? Good. And just tell us your name and your city of residence when you come up. Thank you.
Honorable Mayor Peterson and members of the council, good evening. My name is Abe Garces. I am the project director of the Filipino community of SLO, which is based in our beautiful city of Grover Beach. On behalf of our president, Lolet Galvez, who is in Hawaii right now, and all the officers and members of our organization, I would like to thank the Grover Beach Council for passing resolution proclaiming October 11 and 12 as Filipino American History Month. Thanks also to Donna for facilitating the resolution. October was declared as the Filipino American History Month by virtue of House Resolution Number 780, sponsored by Representative Bob Filner, and Senate Bill Number 298, sponsored by Senator Harry Reid. This celebration is an opportunity for all the people in the United States to learn more about the history and culture of Filipino Americans and their historic and valuable contributions to the United States. In 1982, the Filipino American History Society was organized and initially introduced October as the Filipino American History Month as a tribute to the first Filipinos who landed in Moro Bay through the galleon trade on October 18, 1857. The FANS, which is the acronym for the Filipino American National History Month, consists of seven coalition members from Atascadero to Lompoc. Each year, the celebration is hosted by each coalition member. This year, our community in Grover Beach, the Filipino community of SLO, is the host, but we have decided to celebrate this event for 2 days. On October 11 will be our gala dinner and dance. Highlights of that event will be the keynote speech from the representative of the Philippine Department of Tourism, and also the showcase of talents by each of the participating organizations. We will also be awarding Filipino-American leaders who have made impact and influence on the Filipino-Americans in the United States. On October 12, will be an outreach program. Some activities will be the exhibits or display of Philippine arts and crafts, medical mission, and a symposium on different issues affecting Filipino Americans in the United States. Therefore, I would like to invite all of you to attend our gala dinner and dance on October 11 from 5 p.m. up to 1 a.m. well, we also have party dancing animals after that. And also on October 12, which is the outreach program, maybe one of you can be a members of the panel to talk about the contribution of, let's say, local Filipino.
Okay. I still need to get some other tickets then.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you for clearing that up. Now, I understand that we also have an Emerito Cabreros who wanted to speak. Is That's good.
In behalf of the Narbekanyan Association of Central California and President Mario Zambo, I want to invite all the city council, the public, for dinner October the 4th from 6 p.m. till 11 at the Grover Beach Recreation Center in Trouville Avenue. And I think also we're going to have a delegation from the city or a town in Narbekan that be visiting us too in Grover Beach. So I invite the public to for the event. October the 4th, I think tickets will still be available at the door, I think. Or you can call any Narbekanyan members or call me or ask me how to get a ticket. So I'll give you a ticket. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your service, both of you gentlemen. And Mr. Cabrera is from Arroyo Grande. And then, let's see where we are. Public communications then, unless there was anybody else who wanted to speak about the Filipino celebrations. You're not going to sing us a song, Gigi? Okay. We'll wait for that. We'll be waiting for that on the 4th and the 11th. So I'd like to move then to public communications, and this is the time that I mentioned where anyone may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council. We will listen to all communications. In compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on the agenda. So I'm going to open public communication, and I don't know what order these came in because I was in closed session. But first we have Alan McKenzie from Oceano who wanted to speak about fire response, and then after that, Sharon Brown. So if someone could get a mic to Sharon. Great, thank you.
This came in while you were getting the presentation. Thank you.
Is this on? Can you hear me?
It's on.
Okay. My name is Alan McKenzie. I live in Oceano. And I would like to thank the board for hearing me. I live in a residence and next to a residence that was the site of a structure fire on August 21st of this year. As a result of that fire event, some serious questions were raised about response time of the Five Cities Fire Authority, of which Grover Beach is part of their jurisdiction. Let me just state right up front that as a result of that inquiry, the Grover Beach dispatch was asked by the media. I'd like to say that their response to that was excellent. I would like to commend Commander Peters, Chief Copsey. They openly acknowledged that perhaps they could be doing better on this matter. They asked for a review, and they have taken this matter seriously, and we now know that they have reviewed it to the point we could enjoy a significant savings in time on emergency response in our Five Cities area. So they should be commended in the public forum. Having said that, I would say there are still questions that could be and should be asked on this matter. There are things that should be explored. So to that end, I would encourage citizens of Grover Beach to stay engaged on the subject, to take an interest in it. And there will be, this Friday at 2 p.m., September 19th, in these chambers, a meeting of the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, at which time this topic will be, if not the topic of discussion, a topic of discussion. So I encourage people to inform themselves, to participate in that, and to get involved in this matter. It's an important matter of emergency response in your community. So thank you very much.
And thank you so much for coming forward and for being so proactive, and I'm so sorry for your situation.
Thank you so much.
Are you getting what you need on that? Are you getting help from the public and getting
Absolutely.
Things back in order?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Everything, the response from public officials has been excellent, and as far as our neighbors and ourselves, we've been well supported. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're all thinking about you. Thank you for coming forward on that. Okay. Also, we have Sharon Brown. Thanks, Sharon. And after that, I don't have anyone else, but if you want to speak, please do come forward.
Thank you for this opportunity to thank those who planned, but not all are as fortunate as we are today. The paths of life have been different for each of us, and sometimes difficult and filled with despair. Each of us has depended and continue to depend upon the caring, sharing, and often selflessness of others. Now is the time to look inward at how we can impact the life of others. We must ask ourselves the question, what are we? What am I? What is our community willing to do to help sustain life? The choice is ours. Do we reach out with a helping human hand, or do we turn our backs and walk away? Walk toward the frenetic pace of our lives. The choice is ours. Thank you to all who have helped, who have made and continue to make my life possible.
Thank you, Sharon. And I didn't mention Sharon's from Grover Beach, of course. That's all we had, but was there anyone else who wanted to speak during public comment? Okay, seeing none others, no others, I'm going to bring this back to the council. And we are going to go to items 8 and 9. And that will be number 8 is going to be the appointment to the Planning Commission. And Bruce Buckingham, our Community Development Director, is going to present that report.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the Council. The City of Grover Beach Planning Commission is a 5-member board that makes decisions on land use, development, development projects, and also makes recommendations to the City Council on legislative matters. The commissioners are appointed by the City Council, and they serve a 4-year term. In May of this year, Commissioners LaFerriere and Bloom had terms expire, and that created 2 openings on the commission. The City Council has an advisory body screening committee, as you know, which interviews prospective applicants and makes recommendations to the full council. On August 28th, the screening committee, consisting of Mayor Peterson, Councilmember Nichols, and Planning Commissioner Long, conducted interviews with 4 applicants for the 2 expired terms. It should be noted all 4 applicants were eager to serve. They were qualified and were overall real genuinely interested in serving. At the conclusion of the interviews, the screening committee did recommend that the City Council reappoint both John LaFerriere and Carl Bloom to the Planning Commission.
Thank you. So I'm going to ask if any of the did any of the council members have any questions or on this staff? So then I'm going to open to public comment, and if anyone would like to come forward and speak about this, they're welcome to. But certainly if the I see one of the applicants, our current chair, John LaFerriere, is here. If you wanted to come forward, you're welcome to. And I believe, is Mr. Bloom in the room? No? Okay. So we'll open it to public comment. Did anyone want to come forward on that one? You'll be coming later, John, so we'll let you talk then. All right, then. I'm going to close public comment then, and we'll move on to, unless the council members had any comments. No? Well, we have to approve it, I suppose, don't we?
Yeah. I'll move for staff's recommendation. I'm very pleased that both John and Carl are staying with us. Mm-hmm. They do a great job.
And I'll second that.
So we have a motion from Council Member Marshall, a second from Council Member Bright. And I have to tell you, I know Council Member Marshall sat on some of the appointments we've recently worked on and Council Member Lee, and the applicants were great. They were really hard decisions, and I hope that those of you who weren't appointed will step up and help in other areas in the city. We need all the help we can get. So please don't take that as a no. Take it as another opportunity, a different opportunity. And do we need to have a roll call on
yes.
this? Okay. Let's have a roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes, so that was unanimous, and we will then move to agenda item number 9, and that is going to be the appointment to the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission, and I believe that...
Madam Mayor,
yes, City Manager is doing
I will be doing that report. Just like the Planning Commission, the Grover Beach Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission serves as an advisor. Probably close enough. Anyway, again, both individuals are involved in the community and highly qualified. The screening committee decided to recommend that you appoint Jan to succeed Ellie for the remainder of her term, and that is staff's recommendation.
Thank you very much. So I'll open this to public, well, questions? Any questions first? We'll open to public comment. Was there anyone who wanted to come forward? I see the applicant. If you want to come forward, you're welcome to, but no requirement. No? Anyone from the public want to step up? Okay. Before we bring it back, I did want to recognize that we have several Parks and Recreation, if not all the commissioners here, and a former one, Ellie, who Jan is covering for. And then we have Heidi Boatman and Debbie Johnson, do I see? Who else do I? Oh, excuse me, Jerry Rosenberg also. So we have a full contingent here, and thank you all for showing up. So I'm going to bring it back to the council. Any discussion? Okay. I did speak with Brenda Auer, and she was kind of relieved because she's very busy, but I have some other ideas for her, so she won't be left in the cold either. Any other comments or motions?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee and a second by Council Member Bright. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes, unanimous again. Thank you all for coming. You're welcome to stay for more of the meeting. So we are now moving to the public hearings, and the first item on that agenda, or that part of the agenda, is number two.
Bless you.
Consider adoption of a climate action plan development permit 13-21. The applicant is the City of Grover Beach, and our Community Development Director Buckingham will present that for us.
Good evening again, Council, members of the Mayor, and members of the Council. First, a little background tonight on climate action plans. In 2006, the state adopted Assembly Bill 32, which established a target to reduce statewide greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2020, which is about a 15% reduction from greenhouse gas levels in 2005. Subsequently, there was the state approved a AB 32 scoping program, which then provided many more details about how this would be implemented. In November 2011, a $400,000 grant was made available through PG&E, Southern California Gas, and the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District, or APCD, for six cities in the county to prepare climate action plans. In February of 2012, the council agreed to be part of that grant and to move forward with the preparation of a draft climate action plan. The grant was actually administered by the Air Pollution Control District, and they hired RINCON consultants to prepare the climate action plans for the six cities. What RINCON did, as you recall, is actually develop a toolbox, if you will, of 36 different or potential greenhouse gas reduction measures for each city to consider in order to meet their individual target reduction. This allowed each city to customize its climate action plan by selecting the reduction measures which worked best for that community. Just real quickly on the process, this started in November of 2012. There was a public workshop held at the Ramona Garden Park Center for actually the region, not just Grover Beach. Subsequently, the Planning Commission had meetings in February, March, and July 2013 to discuss the potential greenhouse gas reduction measures that would be placed in a draft climate action plan. In August, then, of 2013, the Council endorsed the Planning Commission's recommendation to incorporate 17 greenhouse gas reduction measures, totaling a projected reduction of 5,715 metric tons of carbon dioxide, which was the basis then for preparing the draft climate action plan. So with that, that input was the reduction measures were placed in the draft climate action plan. That allowed then for an initial study negative declaration to be prepared based on the draft plan. And then that plan went to the Planning Commission in December of 2013, and they held a public hearing to make a recommendation to the council. And then including tonight's meeting. Therefore, there have been 7 public meetings to discuss greenhouse gas reduction measures and a climate action plan. So what is a climate action plan? If you read all 100 pages, element. So the condensed version of the findings of the climate action plan, the Grover Beach target reduction for greenhouse gas is 5,715 metric tons of CO2. This was determined by simply using the 2000, there was a greenhouse gas inventory that was produced in 2005. And so based on that, it determined that the city of Grover Beach was emitting 48,169 metric tons of CO2. The next step was to calculate a business as usual forecast for the year 2020, which was the 57,794, the blue dotted line, which it's key to point was based on the existing trends in 2005. Trends, if you will, behaviors, you know, how much we drive, everything. So all of that is based on that point in time. So next we have reductions from what are already adopted federal, state, and local greenhouse gas reduction measures. And that that creates an adjusted business as usual, if you will, which is the green dashed line. So in just looking at the graph, you can see that from the baseline, we have our business as usual forecast, the blue line going way up in the air. And because of all these federal and state and local measures that have already been implemented, before the city does anything, that already brings this down to below the 2005 baseline. And the classic example of that is the federal government increasing MPG, miles per gallon. That will ultimately lead to less vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions. So finally, the target greenhouse gas level, 40,944, the blue dashed line, was established. That just represents simply the 15% reduction from the 2005 levels. And so after all that, you can see it's simply the target becomes the reduction or the difference between the adjusted business as usual forecast of 46,659 and the target reduction of 40,944. I'm not going to go into the other details. There are 100 pages describing how we got to this, but that is the basis. I'd be happy to answer any other questions regarding the details. So the benefits of a climate action plan if adopted. First of all, it does provide this roadmap for achieving the city's greenhouse gas reduction target of 15% below the 2005 levels, again, consistent with Assembly Bill 32 or AB 32. Second, it does implement 2 general plan land use policies that have been adopted by the council as part of the 2010 land use element update. And those basically say we should comply with greenhouse gas reduction goals established by AB 32, and we should adopt and implement a climate action plan. And the last major direct benefit is has to do with the California Environmental Quality Act and CEQA. Greenhouse gas emissions are now a mandatory element of any CEQA analysis, so your mitigated NEGDAC, your EIR, will all have to do an analysis of greenhouse gas. But the Climate Action Plan serves as a comprehensive plan for addressing the cumulative impacts of greenhouse gas emissions consistent with CEQA. So as a result, larger projects can use the CAP, or the Climate Action Plan, to avoid having to prepare an analysis of not only the project-specific, but the cumulative greenhouse gas emissions. And this does reduce costs to developers. It's not something that has to be analyzed. It also provides certainty because they basically just have to follow the mitigation measures that are already in the Climate Action Plan. So the catch to some of that is the effectiveness, though, of greenhouse gas reduction measures in meeting that target goal of 5,715. It's not known until we really update the Climate Action Plan again with a revised greenhouse gas inventory, which basically would create a new baseline. But that will tell you where you were at point A and what kind of accomplishments you've achieved at point B. So it's important to recognize the greenhouse gas inventories only represent a best estimate based on the current data and methodologies, which are subject to change over time. So in summary, I would say the initial adoption of a climate action plan is a starting point, but it will no doubt be revised in the future as the greenhouse gas emission inventories are updated. So, again, great detail in the climate action plan, but in summary, there are the 17 greenhouse gas reduction measures that are included in the draft CAP before you tonight, of which 10 are voluntary measures and 7, but ultimately, when it comes down to it, they're doing most of the legwork in those types of measures. Another example, and these happen to be mandatory measures, three of the measures are already implemented by the city, including two that are in the capital improvement program for increasing the amount of bike lanes or sidewalks in the city. So those we're already doing. So in conclusion, 13 of the 17 greenhouse gas reduction measures are currently or already being implemented without a climate action plan to varying degrees. So finally, in December, as I mentioned, the climate action plan went before the Planning Commission. They held a public hearing to review that document, and they recommended that the City Council not adopt the climate action plan at this time until further analysis is completed to validate the accuracy of the 2020 business as usual greenhouse gas emissions from transportation sources. And I'll elaborate a little bit more on that in a few minutes. The primary issue identified by the Planning Commission is that the draft climate action plan indicates that the business-as-usual transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions would increase 37% from 2005 to 2020. So, again, if you go back to the blue line, 2005 baseline, projecting business-as-usual, we get to the 57,794. And transportation emissions make up 37% of that increase of the total 100% from 2005 to 2020. So the key here is that transportation-related emissions are just vehicle miles traveled. The reality is when you're driving your car, you're emitting greenhouse gases. So we really use VMT in the staff report to say greenhouse gas emissions from transportation sources. So what's the result of that? If the increase in vehicle miles traveled is overstated for the period from 2005 to 2020, this inflates the overall greenhouse gas emissions forecasted for the 2020 year under that business as usual. As indicated by the Planning Commission, and you saw it in their resolution of recommendation, they actually provided data from the U.S. Department of Transportation, and that indicates that this per capita, per person vehicle miles traveled in the United States peaked in 2004 and has since been declining. So the overall effect, again, of overestimating the vehicle miles traveled is that it increases the target reduction of greenhouse gas emissions and therefore could increase the number of greenhouse gas reduction measures that the council would elect to adopt in its climate action plan. So a little bit more about vehicle miles traveled. Since the Planning Commission recommendation in December, there has been discussions by SLOCOG, our San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, again, APCD, Air Pollution Control District, and several cities regarding the potential overestimation of VMT projections. In June of this year, all cities received a joint letter from SLOCOG and APCD that provided additional background on the available traffic modeling information that was used by RINCON to formulate those VMT projections. In real brief summary, the letters were in your packet. The letter indicates that the best traffic data available at the time was used to formulate that 2005 baseline and the 2020 projection, which includes population forecasts, as they point out, prior to the recession. However, as the letter states, these growth projections are now not expected to occur, and actually SLOCOG has already taken action to reduce the growth, the population projections for all the cities and countywide. So here's what we get a little more technical. So the 2010 regional travel model is what is used to estimate vehicle miles traveled, and that's currently being updated by SLOCOG as part of the 2014 Regional Transportation Plan Sustainable Communities Strategy, which you're familiar, but I'm sure not many people are. We refer to that as the RTP-SCS. And that that work is actually coming forward for public hearings this late this year and is expected to be adopted in early 2015. So since the letter that I'm referring to received from SLOCOG and APCD, something else has occurred, and that is that SLOCOG, as a result, it's estimated that the vehicle miles traveled per capita from 2005 to 2010 actually declined about 9.3% in San Luis Obispo County. And that is consistent with the Planning Commission's concern that VMTs for the 2020 business as usual are overstated. So the 2014 RTP SCS that's in process will include, when completed, lower growth assumptions, the population numbers being decreasing, not declining, but a decrease from the projected growth. It'll also have a revised 2005 baseline data because we have now Air Resources Board giving us a revised baseline, and that will ultimately change the 2020 forecast as well. So once that document is completed, the city would have the option of revising the draft climate action plan using that updated information and data. And that would then basically be a three-step process for the city. The first would be we would have to hire a traffic modeling consultant to use that data to estimate the 2005 baseline and 2020 forecast for Grover Beach. Remember, the model is countywide. We have to take that information and actually put it into a city model. Then, now that you have the correct number of vehicle miles traveled, you would then need to hire a consultant to update the greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. So it's a second step. And then the last step would be to put that information into the current draft climate action plan, revising it to incorporate the information. So these steps are estimated to cost at least $15,000 for that consultant time, and there would be staff time obviously involved then with updating and bringing it back to the Planning Commission and City Council for hearings. So in conclusion, the Climate Action Plan is a long-term policy document that will be updated and revised based on the effectiveness of those greenhouse gas reduction measures. As we stated, the SLOCOG methodology was approved by the Air Resources Board. That does confirm the Planning Commission's concern that VMT per capita has been declining and that the greenhouse gas emissions are likely overestimated in the 2020 business as usual forecast. However, again, it's unknown whether the declining trend in VMT per capita will actually continue downwards, level off, or increase as a result of a recovering economy. So while the overall greenhouse gas reduction target of the 5,715 metric tons of CO2 would be reduced based on a lower per capita VMT, the effectiveness of the other measures will not be known, as I mentioned, until a new greenhouse gas inventory is updated. So if the council did support the overarching goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, then an alternative to the Planning Commission recommendation would be to adopt the draft climate action plan and add language acknowledging that the 2020 business as usual greenhouse gas transportation emissions is likely overstated based on the revised data and that it would be updated when funding becomes available. So after all that, basically three alternatives for the council to consider tonight. One is to accept the Planning Commission recommendation to delay adoption of the Climate Action Plan. This would require directing staff to, again, use the updated traffic data and projections from the adopted or soon-to-be-adopted RTP SCS. It would require hiring consultants to update the plan, as I indicated, and again, a cost of $15,000 in staff time. Second alternative would be to actually adopt the Climate Action Plan, including the negative declaration that was prepared for it. But this would include revised language indicating that the 2020 business as usual is overstated and will be updated in the future. And the last alternative would be for the council to provide alternative direction to staff. So that concludes staff's report. I did want to point out that Ron DeCarli from SLOCOG is here tonight. I think he has some comments as well.
Thank you. And I think it might be useful, before we go to questions, to, I believe that the chair of our Planning Commission is here, John LaFerriere, and he had some information. So I'd like to ask John to come forward, and then we'll ask Mr. DeCarli to come forward. That way we'll have the full picture before we get to questions. And thank you, John, and the Planning Commission for all your work on this.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. Normally, I adhere to this timer, respect it. Given that we've had four meetings, I require a little bit of extra time to show you a five-chart presentation. I hope that would be acceptable.
Yeah.
Confusing, but I'm going to untangle it for you at the end. We started with a giant problem, which was unsolvable. That was an error with version 1.0 of the greenhouse gas toolbox, only affected Grover Beach. Mm-hmm. Recently, we got a handle on the what I'm calling the large problem. And that is the main reason for the delay since the December 2013 Planning Commission actions. This also applies to the other five cities that have approved climate action plans today. In the middle, we got distracted by a small to medium problem, and that is the joint letter from SLOCOG APCD. I hope you'll bear with me with these labels. It helps us keep straight which problem we're talking about. I'm not married to those. We can change them later, but I'm going to keep them for the next 5 minutes. On to the next one. From your agenda package, this should be review, the executive summary, the third page of the five-page executive summary. I've highlighted the 37%. That is the issue that we are focusing on. It was important because transportation emissions had the largest percentage increase, 37% on what was the largest number, 18,549. It's the issues with this analysis that I'm calling the large problem. I'm going to get back to that, but I first want to catch us up from December. On the next slide, please. Slow County demographics. If you take our 37%, put it in the far right column, and you look at the executive summary of the other five city climate action plans and locate them, you go to the greenhouse toolbox version 4, the latest one, and you put down population, household, and job percent increases. These are not annualized. These are cumulative from 2005 to 2020. These are the forecasts that are optimistic, mentioned in this low-cog joint letter from June 17, 2014. I'm calling this our small to medium problem. It is absolutely true that reducing people and jobs would reduce transportation greenhouse gas emissions. But more likely, projections are needed. And really, the key is less overly optimistic. Doing this analysis of forecasts is always difficult. There's always conservative assumptions. The question is how conservative they are and what has changed since these were created. I want to just mention the giant problem for a moment. I showed you on the first slide. The 19.4, our current jobs increase, was a much higher number. It had three digits. I won't say that was corrected, but it was reduced within the realm of now being the small to medium problem that all six cities still have. So now back to the large problem. I'm sorry. Can we go back one? If the council had an appetite for making conclusions about the numbers, population, household, jobs, if you had a chance to digest those, we could go there. I would not recommend that. That would be an exercise in quantifying the overly optimistic, and I think that's going to be addressed, and just want to make sure you understood that that is an issue, too. So we can talk about that if you have the appetite for it, but maybe you want to hold off on that. Back to the large problem. This is the chart with annotations. Simple math, the transportation emissions were a big deal. They were 72% of the forecast. That's the numbers, the first oval divided by the bottom oval. That means the remaining 28% for the other four components, the sectors that emit greenhouse gases. Coincidentally, that's 14.5% of the initial 2005 transportation emissions inventory. If you've read the staff report, you might be expecting now, with your new knowledge, that the 37% is a minus 10, minus 15, or even a minus 20% based on what the Community Development Director has told you, a 9.3% decrease from 2005 to 2010. We're talking about 2020. I have put a minus 14.5. You may not be able to see that, but in the right-hand column, that is a minus 14.5. And that just makes the math equal zero. That is to show you one of the potential ways that this could come out, where the total from 2020 is exactly the same as 2005. So the other emissions sectors are substantially mitigated with this corrected VMT. The other numbers in the middle of the chart, I'm just showing you the 48,169 would remain 48,169. And the transportation, 18,549, would be reduced by 14.5% in this example. So for the final chart, what was the largest issue in this matter, transportation greenhouse gases, is now the key solution to achieving your goal. And that's an interesting point to contemplate. I think we're on to the final chart here. I'm giving you a preview of what that revised climate action plan would look like. Does it mean we don't need a climate action plan greenhouse gas toolbox? Maybe not. We still have to remember the 15% reduction. I've only shown you it going to zero. We need to get to 1990 levels. You need some toolbox measures. But maybe you almost don't need one, because the state and local measures, which give you the adjusted business as usual forecast, come into play, and the revised demographics, which I call the small to medium problem, are addressed, and that probably gets you there. I think that's an exercise in short term, a short summary to the other five cities, alerting them of this problem. I'm talking about a two-page memo referencing anything the other cities would like to learn from us. It's tough to pose a recommendation of directing, recommending you direct yourself to do something, but the Community Development Director meets with the Greenhouse Gas Stakeholders Group, so there's a lines of communication that should happen. The mayor meets with the mayor's group. A cover letter from the mayor on this simple memo could communicate this to other elected officials, because it may be some time before this percolates back up from the staff at these cities to council matters. And city manager also meets with his counterpart, so if anyone wants to open these lines of communication and share this information, I think those would be good things to add to alternative one, which is you don't really have a problem, you don't need to act. I think some of these things are going to be solved, and our good friend Ron DeCarli is probably going to speak after me, and I hope he's going to tell you how these things are going to be solved in the short order. And I am, of course, available for any questions, but I've used up all my time and then some. But call me up if you have any questions. I'm here to help.
I think, John, it might be helpful to ask some questions now. Are there any questions for John now? He can come back later, but it was later. Complex. Okay. I had a couple of questions. You're saying that I'm wondering what, well, one, it probably would go to the Community Development Director, but what do you see as the long-term problem with having the wrong figures here, with having vehicle miles traveled as higher, significantly higher than they actually probably will be? What are the long-term issues with that?
Long-term, you delay implementation of some of the harder things because you're relying on these big bangs from some of the easier things. For instance, the ride-sharing. Is showed when there's a 37% transportation problem, the ride-sharing regional, what is the three-letter?
The RTA, Regional Transit Authority?
The Transit Management, is it RTM?
TDM,
Transportation Demand Management, right? Thank you for that. You get a lot less bang for your buck when you don't have a 37% increase in transportation emissions by doing the ride sharing. So there's an example of something that's overestimating the benefit you are never going to see. So you go through each of the measures in the greenhouse gas toolbox again with the right assumptions, and then you know where to spend your limited money on, because I'm imagining you don't like the idea of $15,000 to fix it, so do you really want to spend $15,000 implementing things that don't necessarily have the same benefit? So you delay getting on the right path sooner.
Okay, and then I don't know if you can answer this one or not, and we can take it elsewhere if we need to. I lost track of it. Okay, I'll come back to it. It's complex. It'll come back.
That's why I'm here.
Great, thank
and
you.
And I'd really like to get copies of your slides. Is that possible?
It's on city's computer. I assume you can have it.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DeCarli, the Chief Executive of San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, thank you for hanging out with us this evening.
Absolutely, Madam Mayor, Council members. First of all, that was a very good presentation. I have been given to the Planning Commission for raising these issues. I'd also like to compliment staff for, I think, doing a very good job at summarizing some of the really key points in this complex issue, relative to the background, relative to the benefits of a clean air plan, and some of the specific issues relative to VMT, the population changes, the VMT reductions, kind of a status report of where we are. AB 32, pretty controversial bill when it was passed. It has different requirements for different areas, a different set of requirements for all the cities and the counties versus our agency, for instance. Our agency was exempt initially until we had SB 375, follow-up bill that then mandated vehicle miles travel reduction problems, issues with our agency, and we're required to come up with a plan, which we're in the works of doing a plan right now. Key component of that is traffic model. So initially, backing up 4 or 5 years ago when some of this was first created, we were at their infant level in terms of preparing a regional traffic model. We didn't have one. We didn't have one down to 2005. It was very, very preliminary at that time. Cities were largely ahead of us by mandate. So I also have to compliment all the cities for work joining together with APCD and getting that grant and trying to look at it very comprehensively of developing that inventory, developing a toolbox. And our staff was somewhat engaged with that, but not directly. Because, again, we weren't directly involved with that until after the contracting. Rincon Associates came to us and says, give us your traffic models, our population projections. And at that time, we had three different scenarios. Originally, it was a high and then a medium. And the third time, we revised it back down to a low. And frankly, I think that's optimistic now, too. So we've modified those. We've developed a new traffic model that addresses our needs. And as your staff has indicated, we now have buy-off from their resources board in terms of how we backtrack to projections of 2005, because nobody had projections of 2005. The really big issue is you have a big recession and just slammed everything, threw all the numbers out the door. So here you are with a climate action plan that's been adopted by all the jurisdictions, very, very high numbers, especially rated the VMT. The other six cities now adopt the plans. The counties adopted a plan. Do the last one. You know, how do you address this issue now? Most of the other jurisdictions, since your staff's been raising this point, since your mayor's raised this point, it's become an issue that the planning directors are familiar with, most of the other jurisdictions are familiar with. The question that lies to you now is, what do you do about it, and where do you go from here? What is the value added of getting the correct information? And again, your planning commission has raised the right issues. And in a perfect world, when you're looking at planning, you'd want to have the best information available to come up with the best recommendations and the best action plan. Your staff's also mentioned most of the recommendations you've come up with are voluntary measures. But you also have a few mandatory ones. So a few mandatory ones like bike lanes, like pedestrian sidewalks. Well, those are things you're doing anyways. It's part of your capital improvement program. It's part of creating more livable communities. It's part of safe routes to school. Those are things you're going to do regardless of whether you have a climate action plan or not. And I think most of the recommendations in these plans haven't gone down to the point where they're having a significant impact on development, on a development permit. That's when you want to get down and brought down to the really specifics, where you're having a big economic hardship on a major project, or even on a little project. None of these are doing that. The most significant, perhaps, might be your parking requirements. And if I can recall, I remember standing up here listening to your consultants talk about the Grand Avenue remake, and one of the first things they said is, do you like a remake? And everyone says, yeah, we'd really like to see this. Well, can you have it? No, you can't have it because your parking standards don't allow it, your setbacks don't allow it, your building mass requirements don't allow it. These are all things that the council, the public says we'd really like to see more of. So that's probably the biggest factor you have. So putting it back into perspective today, having that information, I think, would be good. Is it cost-effective for the city? This is going to be, I think, be an issue that you're going to have to raise. Is it worth $15,000? I'm talking to my staff. That number is very low. It could probably be a lot higher than that. If you look at staff processing time and your time, it's going to be probably pretty significant. Are the rest of the cities going to join the city? I can almost guarantee you the answer would be no. They've adopted a plan. It's behind them. Most of them, it's pretty controversial going through this whole process. I'd surmise in the discussions I've had with most of the other planning directors, the last thing you want to do is bring this issue back up. Are there any grants available? There's grants available for implementation, and APCD has already worked in securing some of those. There's no money available to reevaluate. That's going to have to be something that's going to lie on you. And what is the cost of not doing that? Again, if you look at the menu and you come up with an inventory and you develop a menu of options to meet that target, you've met that target. Now, if the target is lower, which it frankly should be, which items are you going to take off? And again, which ones are a really significant problem that the public has, that the developers have? And I haven't seen any of that come up yet. Maybe some of you have seen that. So it's a real question on whether you would want to go through that effort now, or as again your Planning Commission Chair has mentioned, this is an issue affecting almost all the jurisdictions. It's an issue the Air Pollution Control District is aware of. We're finalizing our transportation plan now. It's not broken down by each jurisdiction as your staff has raised. You still have to go on contract with somebody to break that issue down. So it's a question of at what cost is having the good information available to you. And I think that's the key point your council, this council, you're going to have to wrestle with in whether you adopt the plan or not adopt the plan. Our recommendation would be you adopt the plan with those qualifiers. That makes it very, very clear that these numbers. So again, I applaud you for raising these issues. I applaud the Planning Commission for raising these issues because I think it had to be raised. And it's a question now, at this point in time, what's the most cost-effective way for you? Thank you.
Did anyone want to ask questions of Mr. DiCarli?
I just had one question, mm-hmm. Mr. DiCarli. Thank you for all three presentations. I appreciated that. Looking at Table 2 at the moment, you had just mentioned the state and federal grants. Where would that fall under these measures, or is that just kind of an overarching?
I think it's an overarching one. There are bicycle network and pedestrian network. On the far right side, the city implements this measure through its adopted capital improvement program or conditions of approval of projects.
I think I'm on a different table, too, but I understand.
Oh. Okay.
What table are we looking at?
I'm talking about the conditions.
Oh, I'm actually looking at, I'm sorry, I was looking at the, looks like the CEQA document, page 7. So that table 2, which has all the cap measure numbers. So we're probably looking at a similar table. We're
probably looking at a different one. I was looking at the one in your red, I think in your, I'm not sure which one I'm looking at. Summary of measures?
Yeah, I've got table 2, summary of GHG measure, reductions by measure. Actually, I'm in the initials. Okay, I'm in the initial study, so I apologize, I'm in the wrong spot.
So this was, and Bruce, you might clarify, it was under the bicycle network and pedestrian network?
Yeah, I mean, attachment 6 is a summary of the 17 measures, and in the far right-hand column, we just noted really the status of how it's being implemented today.
Right.
And it does say city resources. The reality is, Ron is correct. I mean, we're also dependent on federal and state grants. It's another potential funding sources for implementing the CIP.
So could I just clarify, are you saying then that unless we adopt this, we will not be eligible? It's voluntary, but if we don't adopt it, we're not eligible for grants?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not saying that. You will be eligible for grants, period. If you don't adopt it, then you're kind of, there's a flash point in terms of, well, as long as it's still in process, I guess you're working through due progress toward adopting. If you decide to ignore it, I think then you're subject to litigation. Initially, you're talking to the council, but I think that would be the case. But you're making due progress. You're trying to work through the process. That's a key point. Your staff also raised that it provides you an opportunity to kind of streamline some of the development review process or any of your big projects.
If we were to choose to delay until we have more accurate figures, how long do you think it would be before we have some of those figures? How long is this delay going to be if we choose that option?
I would anticipate very briefly. For us, it's going to be December, February, March. And we're going to adopt our traffic model would likely be in February to March. I'm going to anticipate if you went out to an RFP and you tried to work through this, you're 6 months or a year.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of Mr. DiCarli?
Actually, I'm not sure if it's Mr. DiCarli or who amongst the three that I've presented so far is, in a nutshell, we've got three options: delay, implement, or do nothing and wait until 2020 in the next update. Is there a benefit or a pros or con to each one? I mean, I understand what Mr. LaFerrier was saying with regards to the delay. We've effectively, if I'm stating this correctly, we're effectively implementing those items, but we may be over-implementing the greenhouse gas reduction. So if we move forward and adopt it tonight, we're basically in the pipeline, and we're into our implementation phase, and then the information gets updated in 2020. We reconsider it in 2020 with the updated information, and then hopefully if everyone agrees with that, then it basically becomes that's the jumping off point for either the greenhouse gas reductions, or we move forward to the 2035 best practices. For
maybe just
Mayor,
quick.
If I'm
okay. From what I've heard, most of the cities are talking about doing an update in 3 to 4 years. So I don't think it's date specific when they start to process. As soon as they can get together and coordinate another grant program, I think that was the kind of the key part.
Okay. So it would be very similar to this round where it was grant funded by, so it wouldn't be a cost implementation to the city unless we choose to delay and move forward with the consultant.
I would say absolutely. The big difference is that when this program started, either for our agency and or for all cities, you're on a new frontier. This is all new. Everyone's kind of working through. No one really had the base data. Everyone's calculating everything. They were trying to get some consistency.
Under our option number 2 from our staff, they have indicated that we include wording. Have you seen this information, this wording that they wanted to include if we adopt the CAP as it is with this wording in it?
Yeah, if you choose the second best option, that would be the right wording for it, is what I would say. That wording that explains it well enough. I'm not sure people pay attention to a wording on page 1. Not sure you get credibility by the community by saying this is all wrong, but please help us solve this problem. But to answer your question, that wording would be sufficient for anybody that was studying the 100-page document if they saw it to know what we're talking about.
Okay, and including that wording, if we adopt it, this doesn't change your opinion that we should not adopt it this time? You do not believe we should go ahead and adopt it with that wording in it?
No.
And if not, why?
Well, is a familiar place to be. We had the housing element recently, and it ended with, it's wrong, we know it's wrong, and we can fix it in 5 years. So if that is what we have to do again, I signed up for 4 more years. It doesn't change anything. I'm not sure the 15,000 is a big deal. If we don't talk about the current year budget, you make a plan for something in the future. I think you can make progress. I don't think these things are going to implement and get results in a hurry. And so I think you've got some time. You don't have to say it's now or 2020. The best thing we did was not having this issue come forward to us, say, January, 1 month after we did that. I think you'd agree, because you have choices. We're having a discussion. We've got the information. So I think the delay, as awkward as it is sometimes the best medicine for the problem. It's not something we all wish we had to do with, but put it on hold.
Okay. Two things. Number one, I want to compliment you on the work that you have done on this. Amazing. I can't imagine the number of hours you put into this.
It's still a 5-0 vote for me, right, going forward?
But again, I do commend you, John. Great, great job.
That's
good work.
That's why I'm here.
Well, we really appreciate it. I think that's all I have.
Yeah,
right
we're
now.
Still at
but
questions.
No raise.
Yeah.
No raise.
Don't go away yet. Was the Planning Commission unanimous in this suggestion?
4-0 with one absence.
And so unanimous based on who is there?
Yes. And, mm-hmm. We don't have that many. They're not all unanimous. We've got plenty of two-to-twos, and we used to have some three-to-threes before that the situation was changed. So, yes.
Thank you.
So, John, actually, I've got one question while you're still up there.
Sorry to phrase it.
So this is a... This plan was adopted by six of the cities and the county.
Five. San Luis Obispo City has their own, which doesn't have an issue of this magnitude.
Gotcha. So just five in the county all use the same model.
Six.
Six, I'm sorry.
Everyone but San Luis Obispo City, because they were already doing it before the grant started to help the six cities.
And did they use the same data provided by the APCD to develop their... They created their own.
They had a Cal Poly team with a different consultant, and they did it before, and they got it close to being more correct the first time.
Okay, thanks. Where I was going with that just is, if we know it's wrong, thank you very much for identifying that, but it's an even playing board, but now the city of San Luis kind of skews that because they just went in their own direction altogether. What I'm saying is, if we were to change it, Mr. DeCarli was mentioning, well, let's just write it out, just accept it for what it is at this point, because there really is no downside other than the data is not as accurate as it could be. And by the same token, we have the county and the other cities, excluding San Luis, that have adopted this plan using that data. So we're kind of at a level playing field. In a way.
They're all different. Each city adopted different customized greenhouse gas toolboxes.
Right.
So every city is unique. Every city has different sectors that contribute more or less. And they've all adopted a similar, if you look at the pages from a distance, but they all do have customization. So each city selected its own toolbox measures.
Yeah, the toolbox is the mitigations, correct? Yeah, but it's all based on the same data for the most part.
There's population and job projections unique to each city, and there some of them are better than others.
But it all came from the same.
Would that be right?
That's unclear. from our standpoint, mm-hmm. we know how we came up with the region-wide numbers. That numbers then went to a consultant. They cranked out an allocation for each of the cities. No one quite knows what that allocation is. That's the unknown. That's kind of the black box. That consultant is gone. They're not here. They work with our traffic consultant, but they developed this allocation, and my staff's asked them, you know, how did you come up with this? And they don't quite know, because it wasn't all jotted down, as far as I understand.
So PTA plucked from the air? maybe not quite so bad as that?
Not quite plucked from the air. Mm-hmm. They had a methodology, mm-hmm. but it wasn't as transparent as one could be. So when we went back to ask why, the ABCD didn't have any idea. It wasn't our contractors with Air Pollution Control District, with Rincon and one of the consulting firms. But no one could really identify the exact reasons why those numbers came out.
So I know we discussed this previously because I was concerned about transparency. I would like planning commissions to be able to, when we have a rocket scientist, I'd like that rocket scientist to be able to review the numbers. We're very fortunate to have that. And I thought that you had said that you think that the next round is going to be something that the public really could look at if they had the ability and analyze and understand how we got from A to B.
I would say that would be, again, an issue with the Air Pollution Control District as they go through a similar contract to make certain that document is very clear and it's transparent. That's not something our agency has done because we didn't break it down by jurisdictions. That the other consultant broke it down by jurisdictions. So
okay.
You've made it very clear and transparent relative to the end product of what those measures are and how much of an impact they've had is documented very well here. What's totally unclear where the base number came from. That's the unknown, and no one seems to have an answer for that.
So I guess my concern is that as we go out to the communities, each of us has a very good feel for what happens in our own community and why. But when you bring a consultant in from the outside acting on a larger area, they don't have that. They're not here every day. And so if we're here every day and something is incongruous, we need to have the ability to determine why that is. And so that's my concern.
You're raising mm-hmm. an extremely good point. Because in the next round that happens, let's assume the city goes out with the rest of the jurisdictions and updates this in 4 years or so. I could almost guarantee you with this individual right here that he's going to make it very clear that number is transparent so he can analyze where the numbers came from. And that just did not happen at that last time. So when the question suddenly came up, no one really had the answer as to why. We were able to look and go, these BMT is going down nationwide. Why are they going up like this? We concurred that the numbers are way high, but we didn't know the reasons why in any particular jurisdiction because we weren't involved. So the next round, I am certain as your staff is working on this or your planning commission or anyone, as they prepare that document, working with a consultant will make that very clear. I want to know how that happened so we can see what the numbers are. It's kind of a fundamental issue that probably should have occurred and was missed because everyone was looking probably at the end topic versus how it came to be.
So as we sit on boards representing our community, then we will have the option at a later date to demand that the process be transparent so that it can be understood and reviewed by our community.
I'd say absolutely, mm-hmm. but it'll be incumbent upon you as you do that, working with the Air Pollution Control District, the consultant they hire, if it's under the same process as it was last time, mm-hmm. to make certain that there's a really good public dialogue on the assumptions that went into it, the manner of which the numbers are allocated towards everyone. One, what the base numbers are, what the projected numbers are, and then how they're allocated to the jurisdictions.
And in Excel formats, not PDF. Thank you for that. That's helpful. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Through the conversation, I had one potential question, and I'm not sure where input would come from. Would there potentially be a third option, and what the ramifications might that be? If we moved forward with alternate two this evening, which basically would be to approve it with language, could we then still effectively opt out, like the city of San Luis, and basically then go on our own path towards our own climate action plan?
Whether that's 3 years, 5 years, we all know that 2020 is this milestone that we're supposed to measure, so it would seem that it would happen at no later than 2020.
Mayor?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
Are you done?
I was just gonna ask the question. So if we did, let's say, the alternate three, if it did move forward, effectively we would either need to go find our own grant funding or fund it ourselves.
No, that's correct. And I think, as Mr. DeCarli said, not that we're out there looking for it, but I don't think there's a lot of money for actually preparing or updating the climate action plans.
It goes into the implementation phase.
Yes. Okay. That's where the grants are available. And again, there's been one that's already been secured. And just the basis of having that grant, as an example, at $104,000, even spread throughout the cities, that's certainly a relief to staff if the council adopts a plan, because that is giving us free manpower, if you will, in order to monitor the measures.
Any other questions right now? Sorry, City Attorney.
Oh,
yes,
that's fine. Just from the standpoint of choices and routes to take, the one caution that I would present for your consideration is that if it is your intention to postpone the adoption, that there is some specific path that is identified. Because basically doing nothing and not taking action on this is not the route that I would recommend.
Thank you. I did have one other question. If we were to delay for a few months until we have some other figures, I know that it does help us with developments, with CEQA planning. Are there any things on the book right now that are there developments that would suffer as a result of, say, in the next six months, are there developments that would suffer as a result of us not having moved forward with this?
There is one significant project that is being discussed at the staff level with another developer that, if it were to move forward, would be in the next less than 6 months likely. So there's at least one major project that's floating out there that would benefit from this.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mayor, if I could add one more thing. Here's the the big disclosure. So I am not an expert at the technical aspects of this. The $15,000 estimate from staff is based on one consultant telling me that it's about $6,500 minimum for a traffic consultant to just touch the model and revise it. I did not discuss anything specifically with the traffic consultant. The point being is there's a big caveat here. If you don't adopt the plan, just recognize that it may be more than $15,000. Mm-hmm. You know, don't adopt the plan based on the principles, but whatever that would be, I just want to make sure that the council understands. If I come back and we find out through RFP process that it's $30,000, you know, that's just something that I want you to be aware of, because this was not as if we went out and got proposals from consultants.
Is it possible for us to go out for an RFP and then choose not to do it because of the cost?
Correct, yeah. I mean, under option three, as an example, you could adopt it. We can go out and do that and then bring it back to you, and then you could make that decision.
And then we'd be further down the line, and we could determine how far along this other project is as well.
Correct. You know, actually, there is another project that's actually in the application process that might benefit from this. But, you know, as we know, we don't have a lot of large projects that trigger mitigated neg decks or EIRs in the city. But the ones that would in the future, that is the benefit of a climate action plan and the greenhouse gas emission not having to do the analysis.
And may I ask a question?
Please.
And regarding the interns that are part of this grant, do you expect that those will be available for several years to come or for a pretty good length of time?
I'm not sure of the time frame, but what our understanding is, and we have a meeting next week on this, I think they're going to help set up spreadsheets and data input that will allow perhaps us to do it ultimately more easily, because they've done the base work, if you will, of setting up those models.
So if
even if it's 1 year, but if they can set up the data or inputs that will allow us to be easier. But I'm still having a hard time understanding how difficult it really should be to track, you know, how many people get PV panels. We know that through building permits. So,
would you be concerned about?
Sorry, I could have done that, Jen.
I don't even know where to begin. I sit here and listen. I can't pretend to be even close to understanding all of these figures, but I do try to stay abreast of what is happening, and I am totally lost at this point. I hear disagreements. Nobody can seem to agree on anything. Where figures came from, I'm hearing things like, how did you get there? I am totally blown away by that. Also, I think that we need to keep in mind not just the target date of 2020 or 2035, but what we are trying to accomplish here, and that is to reduce our carbon footprint and global warming. Now, maybe the city of Grover Beach isn't having the impact of some of the large industrial cities or those that have huge coal-burning electric plants. But the issue of global warming is ours nonetheless, as the level of our ocean rises. So I think we need to keep that in mind. Also, I am very confused as to the role of a consultant modeling, what scientific methodology has been used to come up with all this data. And let's see, what else did I have down here? I don't know. I tried to take notes and got lost. And one question I wanted to ask. When it comes to miles traveled, traffic in general, but when I'm driving, the increase in traffic is very noticeable in Grover. And my stand time, sometimes I have to wait more than one light in order to go. I'm talking over 2 minutes then of stand time. In the meantime, I'm increasing the carbon footprint. And I sit there and I say, come on, guys, come on. So I want to know how stand time, whether it's at drive-thrus, traffic lights, traffic jams, whatever, figures into the metric tons put out by transportation.
Thank you. Anyone else want to speak on this? Okay, seeing no others, let's bring it back to the council for discussion. Council Member Nichols, did you have a comment?
Yes. I would like to encourage this council to vote for option number 2, that would include the exceptional language in it. And I think we need to keep in mind that we do have a substantial project coming up. It's another hotel that's moving forward very quickly. They've done a lot of work so far. They've invested a considerable amount of money so far. They will probably be under construction and open and operating long before the Beachfront Lodge.
based on how quickly they've moved so far. Met with city staff on a couple of occasions. It's an excellent project that's moving quickly, and I would hate to see them get slowed down or run into obstacles they couldn't overcome as a result of not having this CAP in place. I don't see a problem, as much as I hate to go against the recommendation of our Planning Commission, which I have nothing but the utmost respect for John and his group and the work that they have done. I still would like to get this thing passed and move on. So if you're ready for a motion, I'll make one, or if you're unhappy.
Comment. So and this may even be for Ron, Mr. DeCarli, but let's say in 5 years there's the grant funding and all the cities or most of the cities in the county participate in an update to this plan. At that time, would there be some sort of an index change that we could apply and either get credit or dinged for what we've accrued already? Or is that just beyond the realm of possibility? What I'm getting at is like construction cost index from Caltrans. Each year they come out with an index and it kind of does inflates or deflates the cost of construction. Would that be applicable to where we're at now?
I don't know. I mean, I think, as Mr. DeCarli said, that this is a moving target. We're at the genesis of something. We have a new state law. Cities are trying to adopt climate action plans. The state's continuing to change their methodologies. Where we are in 2020, I really think nobody knows at this point.
Okay.
And I'll give you the specific example. So the AB 32 was adopted. The nuts and bolts of it, if you will, are in the AB 32 scoping plan that's approved by the Air Resources Board. That was adopted in 2008. It was amended in 2011. There's now a public draft in 2014. They continue to change these methodologies. What Ms. Brown is talking about, it's very confusing. But there is some science behind it. Maybe not everybody agrees to it, but there is a scientific method in which they're trying to go through, and they're adjusting those methodologies. So it is not stagnant. It will continue to be dynamic, and you will continue to see changes. Best case scenario, in 2020, we do the inventory because it's adopted, and we're way below the targeted number. Great. ARB may come along and say, we've moved the target up or down.
Yeah,
so you see, the one thing I have to say, it's a moving target, and one step at a time.
Good answer.
Did you?
No, I'm done.
I'll weigh in if I might. And actually, I like the way that Bruce put it. I'm going to echo Councilman Nichols. I'm going to recommend supporting option two with the or alternative two with the additional language for a couple different reasons. I think this is a matter of this is where we are right now. The state may change their mind, and I use an example of the diversion rates through solid waste, something very trackable, you would think. The last 2 years, for the last foreseeable future, the state has changed how they calculate that every year. So our diversion rate has stayed about the same, and yet our percentages have gone from 64 to 70 to 68 to 71 to 72 to 40, not to 46, but to 68. So I think even though that's a very defined scope of what goes into the landfill versus what you divert, greenhouse gases is something a little bit more nebulous than that. And yet the 57 and change, 57.15 metric tons of CO2 diversion effectively or elimination that we're going to do is stuff that we're already doing. So, I mean, it's already tracks that we're already accomplishing without a significant impact to the city. Where it would potentially be an impact to the city, in my mind, would be if development coming forward gets stuck in a do loop that we could have taken care of now, but then further review along what Mr. LaFerrier was saying in a future update. So that's what I've got.
Did you want to weigh in?
Well, I agree. No, I was really, really torn. But you've convinced me, and it's true. We don't know where the state will be next year or the year after, God knows, by 2020. So I think with the right language, I will support that.
So I just wanted to say thank you to the Planning Commission. I think that you have moved us along to a place that we would not have been otherwise. I think you've moved the county along to a place that they would not have been otherwise. And in my view, that is why we have citizen committees and commissions. And so I hope that you will continue to keep your eye on the ball, regardless how we go with this, because it's a critical part of our democratic process. So thank you. It is true that plans, business plans, climate action plans are moving targets, and they're plans. So my biggest concern is, number one, that we mustn't drop the ball. And so I'm going to throw that ball back to the Planning Commission and say, please don't drop that ball. We value your assistance on this, and I hope we can give you continued more complex projects. And also I do want to say to the public, I can see every the council and the city, we've adopted in our land use element policies most of these things. It's very, very important to us to consider not only the mandate, but the principle behind the mandate. And we've done very well in that as a city. And so that's not in question right now. And I'm thrilled to see that we're talking about cumulative impacts, because it's the cumulative impacts that make the difference. And that's what we must consider. So I'm going to work with the council on this and support the council's position on this, and just remind us all to stay on our toes and make sure that we continue to make choices that reduce our carbon footprint, and at the same time that we continue to stand for transparency, because that has been missing, and that needs to be built into everything that we're doing. So with that, I certainly will. Did you want to make the motion, Councilmember Nichols?
Yeah. I believe we need to make two motions. We have the negative declaration that also has to be adopted. So my first motion would be to adopt the negative declaration for the Climate Action Plan.
Oh. I'll second that.
So we have a motion and a second. Could we have a roll call on that one, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. And I have one more question of the city attorney before we go to the next one. In order to do this, we have to make the findings that we've identified the city's 2005 baseline and 2020 projected greenhouse gas emissions, that we've established a greenhouse gas emissions reduction target. I can find that one. Set forth the climate action measures, we've done that one. Established procedures to implement, we've done that one. So I'm struggling with the one that we've identified the baseline and the 2020 projected greenhouse gas emission. Do we cover ourselves in making that finding by the addendums that we've attached?
Well, and I also think that the additional language that was being proposed by staff would assist in solidifying that finding. So I think from that standpoint, that would be appropriate.
Okay, thank you. Then could we have the motion then for the second?
Okay, my second motion is that I move that we adopt the Climate Action Plan, and with that will be inserted the language as recommended by staff. I will not read it. I don't think it's necessary, but that information is included in the staff report on top of page 6. Is that adequate to identify the information? Or okay, that is my motion.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Nichols, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. Could we have the roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. That's unanimous. We will now move on in our agenda, but before we do that, I know you all have been very patient. Thank you for joining us. Is there anyone out there who is here for the introduction and first reading of proposed ordinance to amend Grover Beach Municipal Code identifying the hours of operation for card table licenses? Okay. Anybody out there who is here for the consent agenda? Anything on the consent agenda? I'm going to suggest to the council that we actually move those to the end now, and we go to item number 10, the impact of the local homeless population to the city. Any objection to that?
No, I agree.
Okay. So all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All righty. So we're unanimous on that. We didn't ask you. We know you're out there. So let's go to item number 10, and we'll bring the others back after this one. But you can stay for them, too. So we're going to move to the impact of the local homeless population to the city of Grover Beach, and Commander Miller is going to update us regarding the impacts.
Madam Mayor and City Council members, the City of Grover Beach has seen an increase in the homeless population over the past few years, and with this...
Is that better?
Okay. The City of Grover Beach has seen an increase in the homeless population over the past few years, and with this increase, there has been a negative impact on the community in the form of illegal camping, trespassing, public intoxication, drinking alcohol in public, peace disturbances, panhandling, and loitering. The specific number of homeless population in Grover Beach is presently unknown, but has had an impact on the city, generating significant calls for service for law enforcement. The majority of these calls for service are related to vagrants who typically are either resisting free food every day from the People's Kitchen. People's Kitchen has been serving daily food to the food challenged people in town for many years, serving at various locations throughout the city. Most recently, the People's Kitchen was denied a use permit in 2013 to provide free daily food in the 200 block of South 16th Street. Since that time, they have been serving meals to the food challenge at Ramona Gardens Park, South 16th Street Park, as well as a location in Oceano. The meal service at Ramona Gardens Park has given an additional enticement to the vagrants in this area to frequent the park more regularly, hang out for longer periods of time before and after food service. This increase has generated additional concerns from the community surrounding the park, translating into increased calls for service to the Grover Beach Police Department. In 2013, the Grover Beach Police Department responded to numerous complaints regarding vagrants, conducted security checks, and made significant number of arrests along the West Grand Avenue corridor in Ramona Gardens Park area. The department's statistics for calls for service and arrests related to the vagrants in the first six months of 2014 show a significant increase in calls for service and security checks and arrests. The volume of complaints and calls for service from the community and the criminal conduct by the vagrants within the homeless population has had a significant impact on the police department's resources. A majority of the criminal conduct is committed by repeat offenders. The police department has attempted to reduce criminal activity by implementing a zero-tolerance policy along the West Grand Avenue corridor and the Ramona Gardens Center. This includes more security checks and patrols of the area. A large number of the vagrant arrests are for public intoxication and alcohol-related violations. The police department has been working with the district attorney's office to place the repeat offenders on probation in order to assist the officers in preventing the vagrants from possessing alcohol or getting intoxicated. The police department has also been working with alcohol beverage and control to ensure that all local businesses are complying with alcohol sales regulations. The concept is to help the businesses identify the problems with alcohol sales to the vagrant population and also to prevent sales to intoxicated persons in violation of state laws. The impact of the homeless population within Grover Beach is not unique to Grover Beach and not only a law enforcement issue, but a community issue as well. Community complaints regarding the homeless population are not always related to criminal conduct, but to social issues that surround the problem. It is not illegal to panhandle, to loiter, or to hang out at the park. On April 8, 2014, the police department held a community meeting at the Ramona Garden Center to discuss the issues and impacts of the vagrants to the city. Citizens expressed a great amount of concern regarding the impact the transients are having on the community, specifically around the area of Ramona Gardens Park. There was a lot of concern specifically regarding the People's Kitchen being allowed to feed the homeless at Ramona Gardens Park on a daily basis. Community members brought up issues such as aggressive panhandling, aggressive dogs, disturbances, intoxicated vagrants, drug activity, as well as garbage and used syringes left behind. In general, the community commented that they no longer felt safe at the park and that the park was no longer usable by all the community. Staff presented an updated information to the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission on August 21, 2014 and received feedback from the commission regarding issues surrounding Ramona Gardens Park. There have been a number of complaints from people who rent and want to rent the facilities at Ramona Gardens Center. Some have either not rented the facility due to these issues or have asked for their money back because of the problems they've encountered while using the facilities. The Parks and Recreation and Beautification Commission is very frustrated with what is occurring at the park. The commission stated that it is no longer being used for what it was intended to when the park was built. They believe that the city should tighten up rules and better control what the park is used for. The commission would support an ordinance that regulates the permitting process with specific rules that apply to all parks and park users so that everybody in the community can equally enjoy the city parks. There were some potential ideas gathered from the community and Parks Recreation Beautification Commission and from the community that might help mitigate the problems caused by the vagrant population. As the council considers each of these alternatives, it will be important to consider the staff time and effort required to move forward towards implementation, as well as the unintended consequences of how and what, the unintended consequences identified and presented in the future. One of the options is to establish a city ordinance that requires permitting process for specific uses at city parks. The ordinance could set up parameters for general use of the parks by groups. The purpose would be to govern how and what the parks can be used for. The second is to establish a city ordinance governing aggressive animals to address the complaints and concerns of surveillance cameras at the Ramona Garden Park area that could be monitored by the police department. Surveillance cameras could assist in providing more effective police response and can be used as evidence in criminal investigations, as well as be a deterrent to criminal activity. Staff has already identified a funding source by partnering with the Regional Transit Authority. Six, establish a program to eradicate the transit encampments in the wooded area along Highway 1 and south of the train station and along El Camino Real. This program would need to include some relocation assistance as well as additional enforcement support, and the program would also need to include steps to prevent encampments from returning. It is not expected that these options would completely eliminate the transient and vagrant problems facing our city. However, a multifaceted approach could be considered to reduce the impacts. The council has the following alternatives to consider. Receive and file the information. Direct staff to bring back to council further information or draft ordinances regarding permitting activities at city parks, menacing and aggressive animals, aggressive panhandling, for the council's consideration. Three, you can direct staff to obtain or install monitor surveillance cameras at Ramona Gardens Park and the bus transit area. Four, you can direct staff to develop a program to eradicate the transient encampments along Highway 1 and the El Camino Real. Five, direct staff to develop a feed and meter program. Or six, provide additional direction. It is recommended that the council receive this report and provide direction to staff.
Thank you. Anything more? Okay. I was hoping you'd give us all the answers. Any questions of staff?
I do. Oh.
That's okay. You go first, Karen.
Okay. Thank you.
You never go first.
Thank you. That was a very thorough report. I appreciate all your time and effort put into that. I just have a couple of questions regarding some of these ideas. So item number four, establish a feed the meter program. Do you have any idea where the money would go?
No.
Okay.
That program would need further research if we were directed to bring something back to council.
Okay. And then the surveillance cameras, would they be would they be subject to vandalism, or would they would there be some way that we could they would be
they
kept
be,
out of the harm's
well, they
way?
Could be, they could be placed where they would be difficult to vandalize them.
Okay, good. And has there been any thought about how you would eradicate the encampments?
Yeah, there's actually, we've actually been planning on that because of the hotel proposal for the El Camino Real, so there are plans in place for that. However, it could have a fiscal impact because there's property up there that we'd have to store, and there's a procedure that we'd have to go through as far as notifying them and then giving them time to move and a lot of other considerations.
Oh, so there would be notification. I mean, I'm just, it, when you say eradicate, it just sounds so, you know.
So permanent.
Permanent, yes, but it just seemed very harsh to me. So there would be notice and so on. So,
yes,
so they would
proper
know.
Proper procedures.
Okay, good. Okay, very good. Those are my questions for now. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Councilmember Marsh.
Just to add on number six, where you're going to eradicate the homeless, you need to include some sort of relocation assistance. What is that?
Well, as part of the program to eradicate the transient encampments would be to provide them locations, someplace else to go.
Okay.
Forcing them out of the wooded area without any other options, we don't know. We'd lose control where they might go.
Gotcha. So you have to actually give them an option of a place to go to.
Just a clarification on that.
The legal obligation would center around ensuring that their property is stored and available for them to recover.
It's the property. It's not the...
Yeah.
Okay.
But certainly having an identifiable, potentially a place where they could go would certainly be helpful.
Okay. And then...
I could answer further on that, the idea of... providing them another location so that they don't come back into the city.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. And then does the city own that property where they're encamped on Highway 1 right now, or is that state parks, or is it private properties? It's a combination of all
yeah.
the above. So we'd actually have to have the property owner's consent before we'd actually could go.
Schedule.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Haven't you met with Parks and Rec also?
Yes, we have.
Okay. Any other?
I just had a couple
sure.
questions, if you don't mind. Thank you for that, Commander Miller. Kind of going, taking a kind of a larger step back, you had mentioned that obviously Grover Beach isn't alone in this issue. Are we, because of proximity to the ocean and atmosphere and climate and so forth, a better destination than others, and that's why folks are coming here? Or do you see it, and maybe this is an improper question, so if it is, bear with me, is the level of services being provided, whether it's People's Kitchen or whether it's the county facilities, Five Cities Homeless Coalition, are we bringing folks into the area because of the services, or is it a combination of both?
Well, I would have to say it's a combination of it's a great place to live, it's good climate, there are services here, and the community is pretty generous to them.
Okay. So which then leads to my next question is, in your policing of Grand Avenue, West Grand Avenue, the corridor, in your discussions with business owners, what's the feedback that you're receiving from them with regards to their opportunity to continue to do business or their opportunity to do business in town with those issues out there?
No, I believe that there is some, with the ones I've talked to, there's some frustrations with the panhandling and the transients up and down the West Grand Avenue corridor.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to...
Actually, just one more.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Has there been any communication between you and maybe the police departments of Arroyo Grande and Grover and Pismo Beach as far as cooperation on...
No.
No is an acceptable answer. No worries. That's fine. Yeah. Thank you.
I think I feel free to have a seat now. I can qualify that, though, by saying that roughly a year ago when we were considering this problem before, I asked the mayors of Arroyo Grande, and I believe I reported back on this, but I asked Shelley and Tony to meet with me, and because it is a community problem and people go between the communities, and so they agreed with me on that, and so we called together a meeting of all the law enforcement. Chief Copsey was there, city managers, and also the sheriff's department and the three mayors, and we were all of one accord. There was a lot of compassion and some good thoughts about problem solving. Unfortunately, we weren't able to take that any further because we just couldn't get the cooperation to make that happen with the parties involved. So there's certainly a will and a compassion out there amongst the leadership in the community. And so I have to say that they actually, you did meet, Commander Miller wasn't there, but the chief was there. So you did meet with other law enforcement, and I know you regularly talk with them about these issues. So I'm going to open it to public comment now. Please, I do have one speaker. Actually, before you come up, Ellie, excuse me, I wanted to ask Pastor Don Passano to come up, and thank you all for waiting patiently. I came across his organization, ARC, some weeks ago, and I've been very, very impressed with their volunteers and their commitment to helping us solve this problem. So I wanted him to come forward and speak and see if we can short-circuit some of the issues that maybe they can address.
Okay. If I talk too loud, let me know.
And I'll give you a little more than 3 minutes if you need it, okay. But not much more.
Okay. I do have some handouts if you would care to have them.
Sure. The city manager will get those to us.
Thank you so much. I've been listening to the officer, and he's absolutely correct. I mean, it's easy to see if you get on Grand Avenue.
Thank you.
Even in Royal Grande, they say they have the same problem. It doesn't go away. It doesn't disappear. To go back and kind of, when I lived in Fresno, after I got back from Vietnam and I lost my family and lost everything, I resorted to alcohol and drugs, and I hit the street, panhandled. I was the problem. But I had people who cared enough to try to show me some options, and I got out of it. I went back to school, studied psychology, civil engineering. I worked for PG&E as a civil engineering technician. I worked for the city of San Luis as a public works inspector. And now, when I retired, I thought that was it. You know, the golden life started. Well, somebody else had different ideas. I saw a need back in, well, for quite some time I've watched and saw it was us as the ARC team. It's going to be everybody. We all got to jump in the boat and start paddling in the same direction. I've talked to an officer, Peters, is it, at the police department, and I offered him what we're going to do, and he likes the idea. Sometimes I hear people say, well, we've tried it and can't be done. Well, Wilbur and Orville Wright probably heard that too. And Warner von Braun and Henry Ford. But see, the fact that it may have been tried, we've got a proposal that we think will work. And I would tell you that within 1 year we can have 85% of the problem taken care of. And by doing that, I say that in total earnest, in the fact that working with a homeless, I understand them. I also understand a homeowner because I bought a house here in Grover Beach. I'm a resident here in the city. We've got a great town. It's considered one of the best climatic towns other than the one. There's one in Greece and the Five Cities area. They're supposed to be one of the greatest living areas to bring your family to. Well, the ills we have need to be taken care of so that can continue. We've got a great town that can be, I mean, I see a lot of new things happening, a lot of great things happening. We need that to go on, but we can't have interference from people that are trying to tear it down at the same time. I'm willing to give everything I have, and I know my team, not my team, excuse me, the team, team leaders we have, and we have our leaders are so resourceful and energetic and passionate about this. They've just come right in. And we believe that what we propose will work without a doubt. But again, it's going to take all of us working together. Support from all different directions. Working with everybody. In our team with 18 people, we don't have one person leading the show. We all do it together as one. And it works. A lot of people tell you that won't work. But it does. And it is working. And I think that I live here. And a lot of my team members live here also. And I want to see this town grow and be the town it should be. Because it deserves it. And thank you.
Thank you very much. And you have how many folks working with you at this point volunteering?
We've got 18 people right now and approximately 7 or 8 more that want to. We've got people willing to donate, give us things. We're working on a 3,000, if we got to work with the city, 3,000 square foot facility down on Farrell Avenue. We use as a day use center so that we won't have any more panhandlers, and we will take our people and go down Grand Avenue. We find them panhandling or just lingering or whatever. We'll just take them, pick them up, take them to the day use center. We'll give them options. I'm working with the VA. They're going to dedicate a whole wing just to homeless vets. We're working with the CHC. They said they will take anybody that has mental issues and work with them and try to get them treatment. There are a number of great resources. The Good Samaritan in Santa Maria will gladly take some of the people who need housing, and they'll help us get established in providing housing when we can find the proper area. But we want to work hand in hand to make this happen, because we can't do it as a team on our own. We rely on you, we rely on the police department, all of us working together. You know, the police department has got their hands full of doing a lot of other things. They don't need that full-time responsibility of babysitting these people that decide they don't want to live by the law. And I think that we can make that change by offering options and then getting them out of the area where they can have an area to work and be without causing problems. And as far as the People's Church is concerned, or People's Kitchen, we just talked to a church this afternoon who seems to be very willing. I'm just waiting for the response to where we can permanently feed the homeless. But the ARC will guarantee, by use of volunteers, to help guide and direct these people so we don't have problems in any area that they're going to in the church. That's going to be one of our responsibilities, to oversee that. I'm willing to do everything and anything I can to make this happen. It's my town, too. And I want to stay a part of this town.
Thank you.
Is it appropriate to ask?
Yeah, feel free to ask questions.
I apologize. I think I missed your name earlier.
Reverend Don Passano.
Thank you.
P-A-S-S, other people. We are not looking for conflict. We're not looking for pat on the back or a position or anything else. We're looking to help with the problem.
So which leads to my next question. So if you don't mind, you had mentioned that within a year we could solve 85% of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is that remaining 15% those individuals who just don't want to be part of any, organization, okay, but any attempt to...
Well, the reason I said that 85%, basically I think we're going to eradicate 100% of the problem, except when you have a program that really works, you establish a good program of helping people, getting them resources. There are a number of federal programs nobody's even touched. And I'm making that available. I'm finding all of that out. And it's really amazing what we can do. It's there. The resources are there. But see, what happens is once you establish a good program, you have other towns hear about it. Okay. But, and again, putting that in perspective, what we're going to do as a team is to establish an identification pattern. So in other words, each individual will have an identification, and we can work with the homeless. They can identify people that are here or not here. And when you establish and get those cards, then only those that have those cards will be able to get the services. The rest of them are just going to have to move back where they came from. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying we're not going to be able to provide for everybody at this location. Now, once this is established, we may go to another area like San Luis and help them establish it if they want to. But that's right now it's right here. This is what I'm at. Right here, right now, we have a problem. We have a social ill. It needs a cure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So we had some other members of the public, and I think what I'd like to do is to ask Parks and Rec to come up, because I know you had some, the commission had a number of concerns. Sure. Oh, come. Yeah. I think we can accommodate that. We can't sleep for you, but...
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, Council, Public. I'm Ellie Ross, former Commissioner of Parks and Rec. I now live at 2700 Cienega Oceano. I last resided at 158 North 10th Street. My recent move, though I strongly believe in the food program, is directly related to the move. The food program's move to Ramona Park. Before this change in their program, I felt safe in my neighborhood. I walked my two dogs at different times of the day and night. I used the park for recreation with my children. And I enjoyed the freedom of being able to walk to various businesses from my home. I am a hardworking woman, and I work at odd hours. My life had been disrupted day and night, not so much by the hungry families looking for a meal, but vagrants who have many issues. And I would come home to find belongings in my yard, evidence of people using my garden as a picnic space, and my front yard as a place to panhandle, even myself as I would step out of my car coming home from work. I arise quite early, 3 o'clock, and my sleep is precious. My dogs were inconsolable at night with the activity of people looking for shelter at all hours. Needless to say, sleep was near impossible. My landlord and myself had to run off people numerous times, at various times of the day, wandering on my premises. I was limited to the times of day now that I could walk my dogs and where. My park visits with my girls were hindered, since finding needles and used condoms were common findings. I was really sad to move, and I really miss my neighborhood. And I'd like to move back to Grover Beach and my neighborhood someday. But right now, I really find that impossible. I don't feel safe. The only time I really like going to Ramona is the concerts when there's a lot of people present. It's not a safe and comfortable place to be alone anymore, especially for a woman. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for staying up. Parks and Rec, and I'm sorry I didn't recognize you, Dee. We have the chair of the Parks and Rec Commission here also.
So that's revenue coming to our city, and that's part of our job, is to make sure that our parks and everything was taken care of. We had a fantastic meeting that night, and we asked about the problem of feeding the homeless there, and you don't really want to say homeless, because we do have a lot of families and children, and being involved with children on the school district, it's my concern that those kids are fed. Mm-hmm. But when you have a lot of others that are just using it for other purposes, it's not right. And I think we have been here a long time. It's time for either another city to step up, and I really appreciate what Pastor Don has brought up. I think that's an outstanding, maybe something we could get into and do. And I would like to invite you to come to our Park and Rec meeting this Thursday night at 6:30 and do your presentation again. I think that would be very helpful. But I think we need to worry about the other 10,000 plus citizens that live in our city also. We need to be concerned about their needs, their welfare. And, of course, you have your regulars here in our city. Every time you go down 12th Street on the frontage road, the gentleman and his dog are always there with his sign, collecting money. You know, we need to take care of some of these people. And then having work on a business right here downtown, we do see it. People do come by. They sit on the bench, and they're smoking and throwing their stuff around. We do find them behind our business by the trash can sleeping. And, of course, thank goodness we have a fine police department that comes the minute you call. But our police department has other things they need to be doing in our city besides taking care of these little problems. So whatever you can do to help us, or let's find a solution, we're willing to work with you. We are just one little group, and so it's time we do something. You know, and Betsy has done a good job with feeding the homeless, but I think it's time for other cities to either step up or help us, and I think maybe what Pastor Don has in mind might do the trick. But let's work together, and let's have some ideas, and maybe we do need to have another public meeting with everybody. And I did go down to the chiropractor when he had a couple of meetings there, too, and they have problems also. So let's see what we can do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dee. I'm going to ask you keep the clapping down just out of respect for one another because we may have differing opinions. Okay, anybody else want to come forward?
Hello, everyone. Stacy Korsgaden. I reside in Grover Beach and also have a business in Grover Beach. And I would like to thank the council for all the work and the listening that they've done tonight and other nights. And also would like to thank the police department for the report that they provided for us tonight. I'm here on behalf of some local residences and some businesses. I've got a petition basically signed voicing concerns about the park, Ramona Park, and how the dealing with People's Kitchen is relating to the local residences and the businesses. It's very difficult to talk about the fact of feeding people because I think as a whole, as a community, we're concerned about our fellow human being. Realistically, though, there's a problem. At Ramona Park, there's a problem in the community, and I come to you as the government body to look at solutions in providing safety and providing some kind of accountability for this organization that happens to be feeding in Ramona Park. When dealing with people, when dealing with businesses, and dealing with organizations, like Pastor Don said, I thought it was great, was we're always looking for a win-win. And when I look at the entities that are involved here, number one, we have the homeless or the hungry or the homeless. We have People's Kitchen. We have our Grover Beach population, our residences and our businesses. And then we have our government services. So is it a win for the needy? I would say yes. There's a service that's needed, and it's being provided at Ramona Park and some of the other parks. Is it a win for People's Kitchen? Yes, because there's a place provided where they can come and drop off food. But the problem is there's a lack of accountability. Cleanliness of the park, cleanliness of the bathrooms, safety of the people around. Is it a win for the local population? I would argue no. Crime has gone up. The feeling of safety has gone down. And is it a win for our government services? I think the police officers have done an amazing job, but maybe those services could be better spent in different areas. So I love the potential solution that Pastor Don...
At the corner of 16th and Manhattan here mm-hmm. in Grover Beach. I am the supervisor of South County Homeless Services for CAPSLO, and the office at 16th and Manhattan is our case management office, and we case manage homeless people. We try to help homeless people access whatever benefits are available to them, with the goal of finding permanent housing for them. In August, we housed 18 homeless people. I just wanted to throw something out, a situation that I'm aware of. I don't know if the council is aware. You may or may not be. I know that some of the city staff is aware of a preliminary discussion or preliminary proposal to make the Grover Beach Inn into single residential apartments, to convert it from a motel to an apartment house, in other words. One of our major issues in housing homeless people, by the way, let me say this too, the homeless population, like many other populations, the attention's attracted by the extremes, by the extremists. It's not the problems which are definitely present. I actually thought that the commander's report was, you know, fairly accurate as to the problems that are out there. But there are more homeless people than what you see in Ramona Park and what you see panhandling along Grand Avenue. The vast majority of homeless people want to keep their heads down and stay out of trouble. One of our major problems in housing, the homeless people that we work with, is, of course, the lack of affordable housing, and you've all heard that before. And the only reason that I came to say anything tonight is that there seems to be resistance on the part of staff, at least, to the idea of making the Grover Beach Inn into single residency apartments, which...
That's okay.
You
can speak a little longer. Okay. You're on a roll there.
Thank you. All right. I don't know why there would be resistance, because the Grover Beach Inn is, after all, not a jewel of a property, you know, as it is at the moment. And turning it into apartments, or at least considering it, at least talking about it, at least letting a well-known and viable developer discuss it, you know, with the city, having an open mind toward the idea, would go a long way to alleviating some little part of the problem that we're speaking of here. So...
Thank you. Thank you for what you do, too. We met at the Five Cities Women's Food Pantry, so appreciate what you've been doing in the community. Any questions? No? Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much. Anybody else? And I apologize for not calling you up. You did give me a blue slip. I lost track. Anybody else want to come forward? Thanks, John.
I have a blue slip. Mayor Peterson and members of the council, John Schulte, 1185 Encinitas Court. And I know this is a complex issue, and I believe that Stacy Korsgaden and DeSantos made some very good comments, and most of which I agree with. So I'm not going to go down that road. I really want to talk about the report that the police that have presented to you this evening that identifies some possible solutions, because we obviously know there are some issues and some concerns that need to be addressed, and that maybe some direction needs to be given. So the first one that they had brought up was the city ordinance talking about regulating park activities. I think that is a very tough one because, you know, how do you establish, is it size or are you regulating what's in the park? So I know that's going to take a little more time to really get your arms around. The second they had talked about was an ordinance governing basically the homeless encampments. That is a huge, huge undertaking, and I would just caution and just say take plenty of time to take a look at that. There would be some huge unintended consequences, I believe, but that's maybe something that's a lot more long-term. And then one thing that was not discussed and probably has been is increasing police and security patrols at the park and in downtown. I think that's one that was not presented. I think it's maybe something that the council can look at. And then my final comment tonight, really, as I've got 29 seconds, is, you know, the People's Kitchen provides a needed service, and they're helping the homeless and the working poor. I just want to make sure we don't lose sight that they are not the only reason for folks that are downtown and panhandling. We know as people are coming out of this recession. So we don't want to make sure we don't vilify folks, and that we continue to work with Betsy Erler, People's Kitchen, the South County Homeless Coalition, to really find a location, and we work with our neighboring community. So I hope we aren't just washing our hands and walking away from this group. And with that, Mayor Peterson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for coming this evening. Sir, you wanted to come forward, and if you could give us your name and city of residence for the record.
My name is Larry Papps, and I'm from Arroyo Grande, which we have some transient people in our town, too. But right now I'm trying to take care of, with the ARC, do my part, which is to help the people that come into our office or our establishment to help each other, because that's what I believe gets them out of where they are. Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes in for their coffee in the morning, then they might have to stay and help do something during the day to mop the floor or clean the toilet or whatever, just so we get them. And my job is to find the ones that I can have pick up the trash that they didn't throw on Grand Avenue, because I hate the trash. And just to mention something that lady said about finding condoms, well, if you want to find condoms, you can go any vacant lot here on Saturday night and you'll find them, because I take my dogs out and pick up trash at any vacant lot in this city, Pismo, Grover Beach, or Oceano, or Arroyo Grande. I pick up trash because I can't stand it. To me, it's like dandruff. I just got to get it. So I'm trying to, my part of the ARC is to get some of those people to come out and help make the city prettier, where it isn't very pretty right now. And that's what I hope, that we can get our place for the ARC. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming forward. And, well, thank you twice. Anybody else want to come forward? Sharon, we need a microphone for Sharon Brown, please.
Non-techie worked the mic. I would like to second what John Scholl said as far as the options that we're looking at on how, you know, and especially in supporting the efforts of People's Kitchen, rather than blaming them for all the social ills that are going on in the park. We heard these arguments before, and I cannot conceive of people participating in people's kitchen at noon or 11, whenever it used to be 11, but and then hanging around until late at night and seeking out. But I kept hearing the word vagrant. And for some reason, that word really bothered me. So I decided to get out my dictionary and look it up. Because to me, vagrant recalled the times of the Depression, the idleness, the, you know, and anyway. So I looked it up. And here's what my dictionary, Mr. Webster, said. A vagrant is a person who wanders from place to place with no permanent home and no visible means of support. In law, the law says the same thing. And it also includes the words tramp or beggar. Further on in the definition were these words. A vagrant is a person who is idle, disreputable, lacking a permanent home, is disorderly and worthless. I think we need to say homeless and not vagrants, because most of our homeless are not vagrants. Let's see what. Now I've forgotten what I was going to say. This is not an easy solution. I think that there's a short term and a long term. The short term is to provide shelter, food, water for those who don't have them. The long term is to make that a permanent thing, to allow individuals to become worthwhile.
I'm going to have to ask you to wind up, Sharon. Thank you so much. Good ending. Anybody else want to come forward? Come on forward, Heidi.
Well, I'm not sure I'm really supposed to be here because I told Donna and Bob I wouldn't talk.
Well, you have the right of free speech, too.
But I am, as a private citizen who lives across the street from Ramona Park, I just wanted to say that when we moved here 9 years ago, we absolutely loved the park. There was so many activities. Every morning when you opened the drapes, you didn't know what you were going to see. I mean, there was kids playing, families, all sorts of activities, weddings. It was a beautiful, wonderful place. And although People's Kitchen, if they aren't doing it, maybe somebody else would, but all I know is it's not the same place. The children, you don't hear their voices anymore. The families, they don't come there anymore. And it's just a sad, now when I open the drapes, I'm just going to see who's laying out there in the park. It's really changed, and I would love to get Ramona Park back. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe.
Joseph Holmes, a resident of Santa Maria, but Grover Beach will always be my second home because I lived there for most of my life. Karen knows that, too. I just want to thank you all for having this on the agenda. I really appreciate it, and all the support and all the people who came out and spoke. I was wondering about a follow-up also after that meeting in April, because I was there, and about 150 other people were there. And at first I thought that many people would show up. You know, I figured, well, then I go in the room and it's just flooded with concerned citizens. And I was one of them. I think the police is doing a great job, and I told the chief that earlier today. I think, you know, I do feel a little bit better at the park. It's working. So whatever they're doing, what your staff are doing, just keep doing it. And also Bob, too, I'm thank him, too, because I emailed him several times. But do all that. So I just thought, you know, I'll just get a second what everyone said. You know, I'm not going to say anything else. But I just think that people who have to leave and move away is right there. It's just, that should just say it right there. Because that's one person, it could be others. You know, and we don't want to lose any people in Grover Beach. You know, we want to keep them here. So, thank you all for letting me speak. I think I'm running out of time, but again, thank you. Thanks everyone for being here too. Thank you.
Thanks, Joseph. Anybody else want to comment? Feel free, Miriam. Council Member Elect Miriam Shaw.
Hi. I just want to speak as someone who lives near the park, a mom who lives near the park. I have the luxury of living two blocks away, but I've seen a lot that goes on there, and I used to go there with my kids, and I don't anymore. I think a ton has been said about the problems, and I want to talk a little bit about the solutions. I would love to see a follow-up meeting to the April meeting, but I can't imagine if I lived closer to that park than the two blocks I do, and I had been waiting since April. People must be beyond frustrated. We're losing good citizens. And I think Mr. Scholes poked some holes in some of the solutions provided, but I say let's get started. Let's try some of these things and see what works and what doesn't. Because if I had been sitting there since April, I'd probably be packed up and ready to move by now. I think that we should also... the proposed solution one about establishing city ordinances, I want to make sure we're enforcing the ordinances we have now. For example, there may be ordinances governing the building, but if I were to go to the park and just set up a bounce house, I'm sure that there would be some sort of trouble and some sort of ordinance. So by that same note, if I'm setting up a table and passing out food, there may be some ordinance that I'm not living up to that maybe already exists. I also think we should talk to San Luis about what they're doing. I know they particularly, I think, established some panhandling rules. And I loved hearing from Pastor Don. I think it's awesome that people are coming up with solutions. Maybe the follow-up meeting could include Pastor Don, and he could give us, you know, a longer presentation on exactly what's going to be done. Because I would just hate for this problem to move from one side of Grand Avenue to the other side on Farrell. That would not be fair and it would not be right. But I'm all about let's get started, let's start implementing some of these things, and let's stop the frustration from building.
Thank you very much. Anybody else want to come forward?
Hello, I'm Jody Ramirez, here in Grover Beach, and City Council and Mayor, hello. I'm here as a community person who lives here and loves Grover Beach, and everybody here has given some wonderful solutions and hopes. But also I'd like something that would happen quickly, hopefully, some of these options. And Joseph, you described a beautiful park, Father Mona Park. Mm-hmm. You know, the gazebo, the water, the bridge. But I have pictures of what it is now I'd like to give to you to look at. And I would like to see it come back to what it was, not what it is now. So that's why we're all here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming forward. And thanks for setting up your business in Grover Beach, both of you. We're glad you're here. Anybody else want to come forward?
Hi. My name is Jessica Main, and I'm a resident of Grover Beach, and I'm very close to Ramona Park. I overlook the gorgeous maintained park, and I love the view. Not in the recent years since the People's Kitchen has been feeding the people that do need food, and I do have compassion for them. The behavior that I have witnessed is not appropriate for me and my daughter, and I am a single mom with her. She's 5 and a half. And basically, it comes down to the people that are partaking in the food services are not behaving appropriately, and I don't feel safe. And even in the middle of the day, I've witnessed violence, drug activity, and just horrific things that I don't want to see, and it's not fair that I have to see. And I'm into solutions, and I believe that people need help, and feeding people that are hungry.
We get the support. If we get the support, the ARC. If we get the support, in 4 months you can have the park back. I guarantee you, you take my word. We're passionately dedicated to fulfill what we believe. And we're not going to quit. We're not going to stop. We're not going to slack. And in 1 year, I'll give you the end of Grover Beach back. With the ARC. The ARC will give you your beach back.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the council. I had one more question before we have deliberation. Does anyone else have questions? I had a question about number three where it's suggested establishing an ordinance restricting aggressive panhandling. And I know one of the issues that we've been so careful about all along is we want to make sure that we don't violate anybody's civil rights. And so I know that that was one of the concerns about that kind of an ordinance. Has there been any feedback yet on the Paso Robles ordinance? And do you believe that what they have in place is defensible?
I am not familiar verbatim with the Paso Robles ordinance, but aggressive panhandling ordinances are valid. They are upheld if they're protecting the public from a specific behavior. If they go overboard and preclude behavior that's protected by the First Amendment, then they are subject to challenge. But of all the ordinances that are being mentioned, that would actually probably be the easiest one to drop.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
I apologize. I did have one question. It's actually either for Chief Copsey or Commander Miller. A couple members of the public mentioned tonight that the length of time it's taken to get from April to September, obviously every year that's approximately 6 months. Right. Exactly. However, I was wondering if you could just kind of update us on what's happened in those 6 months to take us to from there to today.
Absolutely, and thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, for bringing that up. We had that meeting in April, and we did talk about potential future meetings, and it was also discussed that we would be bringing back the most likely the next meeting, public meeting, would be information brought back to the City Council. There was a little bit of delay in that because we're still trying to work on some of the solutions and some of the information we got back as feedback from that meeting. We also had some additional meetings with the business district, although not well attended. We tried to get more of the businesses with Dr. Bronstein that works down in that area. He tried to himself went to all the businesses and tried to get input from them. And we kind of didn't get a big turnout we were hoping for from the business people for whatever reason. And then we had to get it on the schedule for one of the Parks Commission to be involved with it because it directly involved Ramona Park as part of the component for the issues that surround not only just the park but Grand Avenue. So that's why it seems like a delay, but it does take time to get some things together. And we were doing some research with that as well as looking for some additional for the one item that may have funding tied to it for surveillance cameras. We were able to secure that. We wanted to get that in place. So this is kind of the next step that I envisioned that we had talked about from the community meeting. By all means, we can continue to have another community meeting, but at this point, kind of what I gather here tonight, I think they want to have some, what are we doing next? Rather than have another, what I saw was if we had another community meeting without some type of progress, it would just be another meeting of people getting us information which we already knew. So we pretty much have the information we need to move forward with some kind of solution, and that's what we're looking for from council direction on that. But by all means, it's really up to council. We can, continue to have some meetings and involve the public in some of those solutions with that.
So. Go ahead.
If you can indulge me in one more question.
Yeah, I have one too. So.
Okay. And I apologize. I probably should have asked this earlier when Betsy was actually in the chambers. Realizing that People's Kitchen is not the enemy here. So, and I think that needs to be stated because they do provide a very good service. That being said, I know their issues with the use permit down on Long Branch brought them back into Ramona Park. How's the relationship with Betsy with regards to addressing, being willing to address the issues that you bring forward to when you talk with the people that they're serving and so forth? So
good question. So People's Kitchen has been very supportive with the problems that we identify and the complaints that we get. Betsy and I work very close together. We communicate monthly, if not more frequent. And if there's issues regarding, and I'll just cite one where, we had on Sundays because of the park, and they're within the law. So.
One last question with regards to that. How many people do you think they're serving on a daily basis?
I don't know.
Okay.
Anywhere from 40 to 80.
Okay.
Sometimes it's less. I mean, it really depends on the time of the month. So it's hard to count because they kind of move scatter around. And they do serve at different locations. Okay. So I don't have a count from all of the other locations.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I had a question for you also. One of the suggestions was that we step up police activity. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to the police activity around the areas where we have heavily impacted loitering.
The only way we can really, I think, at this point, increase more police activity than what we have now is to increase staffing. We're doing everything we can with the staff that we have to address the issues with that type of population along Grand Avenue in the park. Our officers have specific instructions specifically to the park to address the ordinances and enforce the ordinances that we can. We're writing tickets for smoking and littering when we can, different ones that we can, and making contact with them. The only we don't have anybody that we can specifically assign to a downtown beat area like San Luis did. They have two people specifically assigned to that. We don't have that luxury. And I'm not so sure there's a need for that. If we assign somebody specifically just to the park, they'd be, it wouldn't be something that I think cost effective that we would be able to afford to do. But at this point, the only way I think that we can at this point increase our presence is with more staff, which we just don't have the ability right now.
I guess I wanted to give you guys credit because I know you've been very aware of the problem. You've been on top of it as much as you possibly can, and I think that those of us who own businesses in the area have seen the benefit of that. And so although it's not something that's necessarily visible to the public as a whole, certainly I can say that I and I think some of the other business owners have noticed that you are really making a huge effort, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Mayor. And I also, since I have the mic, I do want to just, if people are listening and those that are here, encourage them to continue to call us because we will do everything we can to work with the businesses. And as I think Ms. Ross stated, people that are coming into residences and yards, definitely call us because we'll deal with it right away.
Yes, good question.
Yes, sure.
So then, Chief, if there were to be some other ordinances established for the uses in that park, would that make your job or your officer's jobs easier?
Probably not. because we would have, it depends on how the ordinance or the permitting process was crafted. And we haven't really done all the research on those, only because there's a lot of factors and further discussions that would need to go on depending on what or how that ordinance, if one was created, would appear. Because it could be, you know, there's a lot of factors in that we would have to consider, whether, like the city attorney mentioned, some of the legality or the challenges that we may face on those and whether or not they would be supportive in a court. With the right, we don't obviously want to challenge, you know, people's civil rights. So it could be, I would say, it'd probably be harder because the difficult part of crafting an ordinance is not just the crafting part; it's the enforcement and what the court, and the judicial system supports in that. So if we write somebody a citation for an ordinance violation, for example. We have two ways of enforcing that. One is administratively, so somebody pays a fine. That does not work for people that don't have any money. So the other alternative is that we write them a citation where they go to court. They generally, the populace that we've been writing citations to doesn't really care if they get a citation. They go to court eventually under a warrant, and they'll stay in jail for a few months, which actually works out good for the community because they're off the street and they actually are shelter and food and, you know, so they don't mind that so much, but it does, an ordinance a lot of times does assist the officers as a tool that we can actually try and get people to leave the park if that was rather than just enforce. So we don't come in with an iron fist. It's a tool that gives us the authority to help us to try and resolve a problem. If we don't have that authority, all we can do is say, hey, would you like to go somewhere else? You know, or would you like to, you know, not do something? And we don't really have any authority to make them. So it kind of helps both ways, but I would say no, it's not easier.
Thanks.
Sometimes it's easier, you know, it's easier, you know, you ask for it's difficult, it's easier not to do anything, you know, because then the officers can go do something else, you know, fight crime.
Right, well,
but
I mean,
not
of
that
course.
This wouldn't be a crime. As far as the panhandling, and the city attorney is correct in that, I don't know if Paso Robles has been challenged on theirs yet. There are a number of aggressive panhandling ordinances out there in the state that have been successful. And basically, we have a state law that is a misdemeanor for aggressive panhandling. The ordinances tend to mimic the state law, so it upholds in court. But because the cities are crafting as an ordinance, they can make an infraction. So it's easier to enforce rather than arrest somebody. We can actually do it other ways. And it actually helps the cities to better identify what aggressive means because the state law doesn't. And we've had little success with the district attorney's office in filing criminal cases with the definition of aggressive and having a victim. And you can do a little bit more with an ordinance than you can with a state law without having a victim.
So I kind of get the impression... I kind of get the impression those are two that, well, we should probably instigate there. It wouldn't be a lot of work, and it might give us a little bit more.
The aggressive panhandling is a little bit more work because we haven't done anything with that. The aggressive animal one's pretty easy. The surveillance one that's on there is pretty easy because we have identified funding for that.
Okay.
It's just a matter of getting them put up and monitoring them and use it. Again, it wouldn't prevent anything, but it just gives us an extra tool that we can use for criminal prosecution, maybe a deterrence, and that type of stuff.
Good. One last question, though. So those three sound like good options, at least. And then one question on regarding People's Kitchen. So before they move, do we have any data that tells us, yeah, it got worse when they moved up there?
Yeah,
we do, and it was somewhat presented in the staff report. The numbers were not necessarily presented by Commander Miller, because the numbers that we have, again, it's difficult to define what actually is impacted, similar with the one up by the courthouse.
Right.
All we can tell you is that the number of crimes that we have come across and complaints and alcohol issues at the park area have increased quite a bit. And actually, if we're on track for 2014 for last year, it'll just about double. So, yeah, it's fairly significant with the types. And is it? I'll be the first to admit it's not all because of people's kids.
Sure,
that's
sure.
one factor of it.
So then, conversely, when they left Rockaway, do we have any statistics on what's happened
actually,
there?
We don't have specific statistics, but in general terms, again, we pretty much don't have the complaints at all up there. We've actually gotten quite a bit of compliments from Tom Rantolini, one of the major business owners, and the problems that we had up there have gone away. We still have a few of the panhandling issues. You'll see them out there. Obviously, you see them there. But we don't have the problems of the people walking into the businesses and the things like that. So considerably less than what was there before. So some of the problems follow the location where people's kitchen is been. And I'll be, I support Betsy and what she does from a standpoint of the concept. But if you watch the trend where people's kitchen has been, every place, every location that they've been, we've had considerable amount of issues with the activities surrounding that area, whether it's at one of the churches, Shouts of Grace, up at the courthouse or the county buildings, and then where they are currently. So again, as has been said here, part of the challenge is, and people's kitchen staff that I've spoken with, and Betsy is, that's not an ideal location for them. They don't particularly want to be there. That's just where they want it. Their mission is to serve the food, and that's where they ended up. Their preference, obviously, is to find a permanent location that still is. So we just haven't, in discussing with them, that location has not yet been found.
Thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you. So comments? From the council, thoughts on whether or not we should move forward with any of these?
I'd like to make a comment first,
sure.
If I could. So I appreciate Pastor Don's enthusiasm in the ARCs stepping forward from that perspective. I really would encourage them to keep moving forward and almost, and this is going to sound wrong, so I apologize because I'm fully intend to be supportive of the group. I think it would almost be better to keep the city out of it. So, because I think you can do better work as a grassroots mm-hmm. organization without the city involved, mm-hmm. And yet I'm also going to compliment Jana Nichols in the back, the executive director of Five Cities Homeless Coalition, because I think, as I was mentioning, the top-down approach from the organizations and then the grassroots efforts coming up, I believe there's a definite symbiotic relationship there. I know one of the things Five Cities Homeless Coalition is working on is getting rapid rehousing funding. I'm in agreement with number two with regard to state aggressive animals. That sounds like it's a very straightforward adjunct or add-on to what we already do with county animal mm-hmm. services. The aggressive panhandling, if our city attorney is supportive of pursuing looking at that, I think that has some teeth, which then the police can use as a mechanism with the district attorney's office. With the surveillance cameras on Ramona Garden Park, I'm supportive of that with the understanding that obviously Regional Transit Authority, if they're providing the funding, is probably going to want to have the focus more on their bus stop and where the buses stop than inside the park. So I'm hoping that there might be a couple more details coming forth with regards to where they would be positioned. But I think this is and definitely I would say after we start to implement some of these things, having another community meeting to A, get the input, more input from the citizens and the residents, and to see if that's working, if we need to make changes, if we need to modify, because we really do need to support the businesses all along Grand Avenue, and in particular Ramona and in some of the centers there, because without those businesses and without the residents that support those businesses, we're not gonna improve the tax base of the city, the mm-hmm. roads within the city, and any number of other activities that the city does. So with that, I'll get off my soapbox and listen to
the comments. Well expressed. Anybody else want to comment? Karen?
Just go ahead.
Just one quick one. I completely agree with Mayor Pro Tem Lee. And I'd like to add on, I think at our when you hosted the grouping between Parks and Rec and us and the Chief Copsey, something came up that was a campaign to take back our park and signs. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really heard that brought up here, and I thought it was a great idea. And I thought maybe it was something that Parks and Rec was going to take off with, but maybe not. But that would be one other option, is to get kind of a community, a grassroots community. Okay, stupid idea. That's okay.
No.
It wasn't mine.
If I could, Madam Mayor, I just want to indicate that, in fact, I think that's an element of the petition, and the genesis of the petition was just that. Mm-hmm. And it was discussed at the Parks and Rec Commission for mm-hmm. clarification.
Oh. Anyway, I thought it was a good program.
Thank
that
you.
That was it. Thanks.
Council Member Wright?
Well, I agree with what Mayor Pro Tem Lee has said, and this gentleman here as well, for the most part. but I do I do believe though that our Park and Rec Commission, they've worked very hard on this issue, and I know that they've met and they're very close to the issue. I would support them looking at an ordinance that regulates or ordinances, whatever, because I think it is really important that we do something so that people do feel safe in the parks, and I think that really is where that should be formulated, I think, is with our Parks and Rec Commission. So maybe they could kind of look at that and get us started. Because I think that it is important that that we do something in that respect for large groups or constant users or daily users or whatever it happens to be. And really the fact is that the issue is not, as we've all said, it's not with the folks who are wanting to better their life and wanting to get ahead and so on. It's those folks that really don't care about the folks that want to use the park and so on, that aren't respectful. That is our problem, and so that's who we really have to protect our citizens and our children and everyone else from. And so I think if we go at it from that perspective, I think that we can really make a difference, I think. So I would like to see that happen, but these other things, I think we could get them started. And at least we show that we are going, that we are getting started, and we make some progress anyway.
Great. Actually, if I could mm-hmm. kind of sure. feedback on that, I apologize. I should have said this during my comments as well. We were just down at the League of California Cities, and actually one of the sessions that I got a chance to participate in had to do with panhandling and solicitation. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, not the good type of solicitation. So, but dealing with the panhandling, more towards...
I understand that we're in favor of asking them to move forward insofar as recommendation number one, mm-hmm. move forward and come back to us with some sort of a recommendation on having a use permit for use of the park, parameters insofar as groups, numbers, stuff like all that. So that'll come back to us, I take it. Going on to number two, we are asking that they establish an ordinance for aggressive animals. Number three, we're also asking that they work on an ordinance restricting aggressive panhandling. Item number four, I have questions about that. I don't think you've mentioned that yet. I would like to see more information about that before we have staff move forward on it. I think we need to know if it's, I know it's established in San Luis Obispo, but how is it working and how would we set it up in this community? I would just like to see that come back before the council before we actually have staff move forward with it. On item number five, the surveillance cameras at Ramona Garden, absolutely. I think that's an outstanding idea. And obviously that will come back to the council with their recommendation on where they're going to install the cameras, how they'll be installed, how they'll be operated, so on and so forth. So, and then item number six, the program to eradicate the transient encampments. That's a big job for the police department, and I would suggest that we would be more than willing to entertain any sort of a program that they can come back to us with.
Thank you. I have to apologize because if you saw me looking at my phone here, it's because I had an email from Duke and Laurie Sterling, and they asked me to read it during public comment, and I forgot, got distracted. So if you could all bear with me, I promised them I would do that. They weren't able to be here. So I'll condense it a little bit. But they said that after a recent series of events, they've come to a change of heart in regards to their participation with the topic of vagrancy in Grover Beach. And it had come to their attention that their discussions and actions for reformation of public feeding in the city parks has made some people in the community question their integrity, which is strongly attached to their Christian beliefs. If they've made any of you stumble in your beliefs due to their desire to help Grover Beach find solutions to the issues surrounding vagrancy, they want to sincerely apologize. Their intention has always been for the greatest welfare of Grover Beach, including the business community of which they are involved, and they have been personally impacted by the increased local homeless population. They said that we fully believe that the city staff of Grover Beach, along with the city council, will take whatever actions are necessary to unite our community and open the opportunity for peace for all its residents and businesses. They have read the staff report for this evening's meeting, and they support any and all of the six potential ideas. And please know that they are not walking away from the issue or from the city, and they want to help. However, it is deeply important to them that they surrender and realign the integrity of their hearts so that their actions are viewed as sensitive to the needs of all, and they believe they need to step aside. So they said they'll be praying for tonight for God's blessing over the meeting and for the direction that the council advises the city. That was Duke and Laurie Sterling. So apologies for bringing that back late, but I felt like I needed to honor their request, having said I would do so. So I just had comments. I support the same ones that we seem to have consensus on, number one, number two, number three, and number five. And just wanted to mention that it's come back to me from some sources that there's a belief out there that some of us may hate People's Kitchen. And I want to say that I have never heard that comment made by any of us up here. And in fact, I really haven't heard that comment made by people in the community. I think the concern is certainly not for the hungry. It's certainly not that we don't, that it's not harshness towards homelessness. It is a concern about the small percentage of folks who are operating in such a way as to make life pretty difficult for the rest of us. And so I just wanted to thank everybody. I think that we've worked hard tonight to build one another up. I want to thank People's Kitchen because there is a group of people there who have tirelessly for years worked to feed the hungry, and that is something we want to build up and support. And to that end, I'd mentioned that I had met with the mayors, and there's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes, and it's very frustrating for folks. They can't see it happen. Some of it needs to happen behind the scenes. For instance, I know that there was a meeting tonight with one of the churches that I had pursued with Don, and Don had pursued with me, but I can't speak to that yet because it's a decision not made by their leadership. So just to let you know, I know that the police and the city attorney and the city manager have been researching it tirelessly. I know that members of the council have been seeking solutions, and I've done the same and had been approached by numerous community leaders, directed them to Betsy, directed them to the five.
I just wanted to make a comment that you're welcome to come to our Park and Rec meetings. They're mm-hmm. on Thursdays, the third Thursday of every month at 6:30. And a quick question we can't agendize this addendum to our meeting. It'll have to wait till next month. I mean, the agenda just went out. We can't put it for this, mm-hmm. so we can discuss it openly.
Discuss which part?
What we're talked about tonight.
For an action item, though, you would need to put it on the next agenda.
But we can discuss it. We can discuss it as, say, one of the commissioners had come here tonight, so they can just discuss it. We can't take any action. I realize that.
Yeah, a report can be given, but you should not deliberate
no,
or
no.
take any action.
So that way we can just share with the rest of the commissioners.
Madam Mayor, if
yes.
if I
please.
Could,
mm-hmm.
A standard item on the Parks and Rec Commission is a report on city council activities that relate, mm-hmm. and this obviously would be an acceptable report under that.
And the public can come and comment
certainly.
During public comment. They maybe can't take action on public
yeah.
comment, and we're doing that this evening. But they can certainly come forward and express their views, and then you can also have a community meeting.
Okay. And also, too, are we privy to any information that Jeff got at the league, you know, about the panhandling thing and that kind of stuff?
The League of California Cities has
yeah,
that
exactly.
online, so if you go to, is it CACities.com, I think is the website.
If you just type in League of California Cities in the Google search, it'll
mm-hmm.
come up.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Sorry.
And the session was titled Panhandling and Solicitation, so if you look for that. I believe they were going to post each of the PowerPoint presentations online. I haven't downloaded it yet, but I believe
they
were planning
yeah.
on doing that.
Well, if you do, you can just pass them on to us.
There you go.
So finally, I wanted to say that following on from the fact that this is your community meeting, we are your council. You elected us. We're here to do what we can to help make the community work, and we need you all to engage, and I'm so thankful to all of you for being here and for doing that. And finally, the one thing that hasn't been discussed really has been, we've talked around the issue of safety, but safety is really important. When we have needles in the park or we have defecation or urine or dangerous animals, safety has to come first, not just for the homeless folks or the folks who are there, but for all of us. So I want to make sure that we don't forget that as the people you've elected, we need to make sure that we keep people safe at every level, all people safe. And they do share, and you're right, they all count. None of us are worthless. Don, I think I'm going to have to cut it off tonight.
Okay.
I
just want to say that when Mr. Bell said, you know, to leave the city out of what we're doing, I never intended for the city to be a part of it. The only thing I'm saying is that we need to get and learn of the policies and procedures so that we're not stepping into something we're not going to violate.
So I'll paraphrase that for you. Don was saying that he never intended that this be a city-directed program, that the important thing to them is to understand what the city rules are so that they can work with us and honor those, and I'm very thankful to you for that. So I think it's time for a motion. Who's...
I think we need
direction,
right?
Or is it just direction tonight?
Yeah,
okay.
I think for staff's clarification, mm-hmm. Whether or not I'll leave it up to the chief how much specific direction. One issue that was raised is taking the ordinance, and it wasn't specific on which one, before the Parks and Rec Commission, before bringing it back to the council. If that is the direction, that would most likely be applicable to the first item, and that is the ordinance that would control how the parks are used
mm-hmm.
in the city. As far as the dangerous animal ordinance or
no.
the aggressive panhandling, I think those can come directly to you. And depending on the format of the other ordinance, it may also be appropriate to have Planning Commission participate in that issue. But I'll leave it up to Chief as far as sufficient direction or how you'd want the council to act on that.
Commander Miller has sufficient information and direction from the council.
Great. What about location of the cameras?
So
I would want to mention, too, mm-hmm. that we will work as fast as we can to get things back to the council or back to the Parks Commission or the community, what needs to be done. It will take some time, especially with the ordinance reviews, mm-hmm. With attorney and some of the laws, and we have looked at some of the panhandling stuff, and there are specific ordinances that we have already gathered, so we're going to be working on that diligently as we can. As far as the surveillance cameras, since you've asked, we can bring that up back to the council for specific locations, but the information that Commander Peters has already gotten is we will be put, the plan was to put up two cameras. You can always move the location, but absolutely.
Yeah. And the reason I have a dilemma here because I really want to use our advisory bodies. On the other hand, we need to move quickly on this. And so that can cause a month delay.
So maybe just a report. Maybe you could just report back once you've done it.
The Parks Commission, I got the sense from the meeting we had with them, they were supportive of it. Okay. Of that.
And I'm getting nods from the chair, so I feel pretty comfortable. The last thing I ever want to do is not weigh in with our advisory committees, but I know they want to move quickly, too. So. Oh, dear. Okay.
With that, we have sufficient information to move forward.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's time for a break. So I'm going to call a five-minute break. It's 10:30. We'll be back at 10:35. Thank you all for being here.
Go back to number three.
Let's go for it. Oh, no, Bill's not here. You know what? I'm going to call it to order. Okay. All right. I'm calling our meeting back to order. It's 10:39, and we are – Bill will be here momentarily, I'm sure. Do I need to do a roll call again? Okay. Great. Good.
I'll make a motion that we proceed past 11 o'clock.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Four.
We have a quorum.
Is
that all we need?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have four out of four. Yes.
We got four out of four. We're
going to
continue after 11 tonight. So we are now moving on to item number three on the agenda, introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance to amend Grover Beach Municipal Code Article 10, Chapter 4, identifying the hours of operation for card table licenses. And our city attorney and police chief assistant city manager are going to deliver this one.
Can you talk really fast?
Yeah.
I really can talk really, really fast.
No, we can't.
So last year, the city amended Grover Beach Municipal Code regarding the card rooms. And in that amendment, they changed the hours of operation to 24 hours, 7 days a week. So we just struck that language out of the ordinance. And reviewing the gaming code, laws, and the state business profession code requires that we specify in our ordinance what those hours are, even if they are non-restrictive to the 24 hours. So we need to add the 24 hours back in. And in order to add those previously approved hours of operation for the card table licensing, require amendment to reflect that inclusion. So we have done that in that section 1047 of our municipal code for hours of operation has been added in, and it's underlined twice in there. Mm-hmm. And at this point, staff has recommended the City Council consider public testimony, conduct the first reading of the ordinance by title only, and schedule the second reading and adoption for the next regular council meeting. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I have one silly question.
Yes.
So 365 per year. So is the state going to come back at some point and say we have to add the words leap year?
No.
Good. Thank you.
Because it doesn't specify years, it specifies 24 hours a day.
Perfect.
Any other questions?
Okay, I'm going to open this to the public. Anybody from the public want to come forward? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. And do we have...
Actually, I have one recommendation on the text here.
That's the way I read it.
Subject to use permit...
for the location.
Yeah. We can place conditions on the operation, but the ordinance allows them to be open 24/7.
Okay. So it's right as it is?
Thank you.
Then I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, second by Council Member Nichols. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. So now moving on to our consent agenda. Did anybody have anything that they wanted to pull from the agenda?
Can't remember.
We had a treasurer's report and minutes.
No. I'll move that we approve the items as listed in the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Moved by Council Member Bright, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. As a voice vote, all in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. Unanimous. So the consent agenda sitting as successor agency, do we need to close down this meeting and reconvene?
No. No? You're sitting in the same meeting. But
we're sitting in the same seats.
Separate motion.
We haven't moved. All right. So next consent agenda, does anybody wish to move pull anything from this consent agenda?
I just have a question on 7.
Okay. Let's hear the question.
Is I see we're basically renewing a contract. Is that a good way to put it? Or was the old contract finished and then this is the new contract?
As I recall, and Gayla, you can correct me, it also is an adjustment in compensation, the consultant's compensation for that contract.
And I think that's probably where my question lies, is the fact that did we finish that contract and this new contract raises the fee, or are we extending their old contract with an increased fee?
The old contract was going on year to year. He had not increased his fee for a couple of years, so he's asked for a fee increase.
Okay.
So this is item 6 you're talking about.
Yeah. Item 6, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So.
I said 7.
I had a question on item 7. Actually, at the very last page where it refers to legal fees, I just want to see if I can verbalize this and tell me if I've got it right or not. That basically we were partly in contract. We believed fully in contract to develop that property with a developer, and the state took the property because they abolished the development agencies.
Mayor,
redevelopment? Yeah.
And if I may jump in.
Yeah, please.
As you will note, the item is agendized for the closed session.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. So I would prefer that we discuss the details of the item.
Okay.
The item is depicted on the ROPS for application submission for financial reimbursement.
Oh,
state.
Okay.
But we can discuss the details.
But the paperwork is here in the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Until and unless it's acted on and approved by the council, I would prefer we don't discuss it.
So, but we can go ahead and approve the consent agenda.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Oh, wow.
All right. Could have fooled me. Okay. So, you did fool me. I have no questions for here. Could we have
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda for the successor agency as listed here.
I'll second that motion.
So moved by Council Member Bright, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. Roll call vote on this one, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. So that was unanimous. We had no pulled consent agenda items. I believe we've covered everything on the agenda now. We'll go on to the next thing. I do have one comment to make, but council committee reports. Council Member Bright.
Oh, boy. I can hardly even think anymore. It's so late. Briefly, I had a county housing trust fund meeting, And there was the only item that I think would be of interest to this council is there was mention of Green Park here in Grover Beach. There had been, I guess, some discussion of possibly some funding for the lower income housing that is required of that development.
Great.
And so whether or not we'll be able to assist there.
Do a feasibility study for food waste diversion collection, effectively, and composting at a mm-hmm. at a site in San Luis Obispo. Number of issues surrounding the next goal of diversion at 75% is going to need to surround a collection of food waste. So that's why that kind of that pilot study, that feasibility study, is moving forward. We'll see. I'll keep you updated on that. Two other items, for one for Visit San Luis Obispo County. The meeting is this week, but in advance of that, I wanted to kind of do a shout-out to Savor the Central Coast, which is not this weekend, but the weekend of the 27th and 28th. So I'm sure tickets are still available. And speaking of tickets still available, on the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which I also happen to sit on, they're doing a fundraiser event, the Empty Bowls, which is the 24th, which is
I'm getting too many bowls. They have those fundraisers frequently.
Exactly. So and my wife loves those bowls. So
on September 24th?
September 24th. Okay. Yeah, it's a Wednesday. So from 11 to 2, I believe it is.
Same church?
Yes, St. Saint,
oh,
Saint Patrick's.
It is. I've got it there.
And I have tickets if anyone is interested in purchasing them. So, lastly, with regards to that, for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, the organization is having a organizational structure, a retreat, for lack of a better term, to kind of make sure that the mission is going in the right direction for the board members and to talk about that. So I'll keep you posted as that moves forward as well. And I'm sure one of the items of discussion will be our homeless discussion that we had this evening as well. So great. Other than that, I'm done.
Thank you. Councilmember Marshall.
Sure. South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, speaking of homeless, they have encampments outside their gates, and so they've been having some issues and working with the Sheriff's Department, who's been very helpful, and with parks in trying to eradicate the...
Got to be a better place.
Oh, wouldn't you think? It's right next to the Digester. I don't know.
Yikes.
Yeah, exactly. And then other than that, it was a fairly short meeting. The Oceano Services District settled on an agreement for the sanitation district to be their... oil and grease. Yeah, they're fats, oils, and greases, the fogs. So the district will be doing that for Oceano. And we approved their sewer maintenance plan. And that was about the extent of the meeting. There's another meeting this Wednesday evening. It starts at 6 o'clock at the Rio Grande City Hall. And there's also an HSOC this Wednesday day, which usually is 1:30 or 2 o'clock at... the Vets Hall in San Luis Obispo.
What's HSOC?
Homeless
Services
Oversight Committee.
Oh, good. Okay. Councilmember Nichols?
I have nothing to report tonight.
All righty. And on the Economic Vitality Corporation, no meeting in August. However, I did have a call from Mike Manchak, the CEO and president, and talking about perhaps putting together a pro forma or a template for incubators, business incubators, especially tied in perhaps with our fiber optic network. So we may see something coming up on that. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governments and the Regional Transit Authority did meet last week, and they'll be meeting again on the 1st of October. So what I'll do is I'll consolidate those two reports on the 6th of October, and because we all saw Ron DeCarli, their CEO, tonight anyway, so we'll let that suffice. And with that, we'll move into council communications. Does anybody have any council communications?
I do.
Great.
Let's get there real quick, fast. I had a call from a neighbor regarding a water notice. He was very concerned because although he insists that he's used less water, he still has received this notice saying that he has not used less water. So I believe that he spoke with Gayla, and I think...
Yeah, this afternoon.
So there's some real concern there. So he wanted me to make mention of it here and during council communications. So that's my council communication. Thank you.
Anybody else have any communications?
So on the opportunity that I might step on the bad opportunity that I might step on the city manager's toes. Again, down at the League of California Cities, got introduced to a gentleman from the Infrastructure Bank and with regards to some potential funding sources.
Would amount to somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 million that would pay for the costs of the remaining infrastructure that includes streets, the relocation of the dump station, the work that needs to be done associated with LaSage and the park amenities. I need to, I'm pleased to tell you that we are actually going to receive a formal invitation to submit an application for that grant. And so what that means is we've managed through the first threshold of information and material that needed to be submitted, and so now we're at the point where we're going to undertake the application, which is very positive for us. It'll probably still take. We'll be meeting with HCD folks actually a week from Friday, and they'll be taking us through what the application process looks like, what the requirements are, and I should be able to provide you a further update after that meeting, and we'll continue to follow up on the infrastructure bank on the other.
Great news. Thanks, both of you. Any other council member announcements, communications? I wanted to just commend Grover Beach United, and because the car show on the weekend was just wonderful. It was beautiful weather. It was positive. There was a great vibe there, and I thought I didn't like car shows, but the cars were really fun. I really enjoyed it, actually. And also, I wanted to pass on to Parks and Rec that I ran into three folks from Morro Bay who just could not say enough about how wonderful our concerts are. And they wanted me to personally commend Parks and Rec publicly. So you're commended. And it was I hear that in the park every time I'm there for the Sunday concert. So for those of you who don't go, come along 3 to 6. I think we've got two left this year, Sunday, 3 to 6. And then... coastal cleanup on Saturday morning. The Coastal Commission is sponsoring their cleanups up and down the coast. We have one or two that'll be staging out of the parking lot right here in Grover Beach by Finn's. So if you feel like cleaning up your beach, 9 to 12 on Saturday. And then just a couple of other upcoming things. Huckfest will be taking place mid-October, and they're working to provide some opportunities for local businesses to get involved and provide coupons or whatever. So if you're a local business, you want to support Huckfest, and you want to drum up some more business, then let me know, and I'll put you in touch with the right folks on that. And then finally... I can't remember what day the League of Cities meeting is down in Camarillo. I was trying to check my calendar here.
I believe that is, isn't that Friday?
I know it. I couldn't remember what Friday. October something?
Is the October 24th.
October 24th. Okay. Yeah. So we've got plenty of time. But I wanted to encourage everybody to take that... take the tour. I guess you know about it. We talked about it. But take that tour at 3 o'clock of their wastewater system. It's an architectural work of art, and it doesn't smell. It's beautiful. So I really encourage you to go see that. I was there over a year ago
the mayor of Pismo, and it was just an incredible opportunity, especially for you civil engineers and sanitation district representatives. And that was all I had at city manager's report and comments.
Could yeah, just
one more thing,
sorry.
Though?
Yeah.
I just, I'm sorry. Aren't we having our cleanup for the sanitation? I mean, for our I can't even.
Oh yeah, we were doing. The park was going to be doing something.
And then for the for our trash and.
Yes, that is actually September 22nd.
22nd.
Okay.
Starts on the 22nd and through the following week, so you know folks can put out more trash at the curbside, and
right,
it'll
up
be
to like
picked
four
up.
Bags, I think.
Right. And some of those details are listed on Channel 20.
Oh, good.
So, and on the website
as
well.
And on our website? Okay, good. I just hate for people to miss that because it's...
And I wanted to say, too, that I had forgot to mention in the item on I'll call it vagrancy. That's what we've been calling it. But what our last long, lengthy item, that if folks in the public want to have more meetings, I'm sure all of us would support that. So I certainly wasn't wanting in any way to indicate that this is their only chance to have meetings. So if folks feel they need more meetings, then I'm sure they can speak with the chief.
Zone 3 committee and the advisory board will then make the recommendation regarding its implementation to the Board of Supervisors, and we expect that that's going to happen about December. It is likely that if we don't get any rain, the lake will reach that 20,000 acre foot level probably about December, January. Could be a little bit later than that. And what I need to say about that is I am certain that the low-level release plan will require reductions in entitlements that the city receives. That's the amount of water we get out of Lopez. And it'll also most likely reduce downstream releases as well. The important part of that for the city is that right now we're at that at the 10% reduction requirement, and I know that we recognize that that's a big effort for many people to accomplish, but realistically, if we go to having to reduce entitlements, we could be looking at within the next year having to kick our own stage from 3 to 4, and quite possibly could be dealing with a 20% reduction requirement. I just want to note relative to that that notices will be going out to folks that are living on the south side. The first notice that folks receive or customers receive will be going to our notices that reflect the fact that that individual customer hasn't been able to reduce by 10% as compared to the same time last year. This is a courtesy notice. It's just an attempt to try and escalate everybody's focus on the need to reduce water, and certainly indicates that we're willing to discuss water usage with anyone that has a concern. We're then that will occur. This is the first notice. The second notice goes after the next billing cycle, and at that point, if the customer has continued or is unable to reach the reduction requirement, we'll notify them of potential penalties, but at that point we are actually going to have personal contact with the customer and review their usage, what they're doing, and you know, try and advise them if there's anything additional that they may be able to do. There won't be any fining until you get to after the third notice. So the basic emphasis is just to get everyone to conserve as much as possible where they can. So I know there is some concern about the courtesy notices going out, but they're mostly at this point just to get everybody's attention. The other thing I wanted to just alert everyone to is that it's a separate item. Cleaver Park, if you remember, Mr. Clark had agreed to actually pay the cost to have those improvements in the pocket park actually completed. And the contractor for those improvements will begin work on that actually, I think, the 29th of this month. Great. So you'll finally begin to see some improvements occurring out there.
Great.
That's the end of my report.
City Attorney, did you have any reports and comments? Well,
can I just want to real quick?
Yes.
So I apologize. I was going to ask a question to the city manager. And first, I'll apologize. Last month, I had kind of represented that I couldn't find the water conservation program listing. I went to the website right after the meeting, and it was right on the front page. So obviously, I missed that. I did have a conversation with someone in the community that said the I think it was the one of the plumbing fixtures. It was the replacement of the toilets and so forth. There's about a 3-month waiting list. Is that true, has that been reduced?
You know, I'd have to look back to Public Works. If there's a waiting list, it's probably just actually the level of activity has picked up significantly. And, you know, we only have certain plumbers that are actually doing the installation.
Is it on? Hello? So the waiting, if you recall, with the modifications to the water conservation program, one of the big issues was with the toilet retrofit program. There was really only one plumber at the time that was interested because of the amount we were paying for labor. So now with the change, we've...
Thank you. It is 11:09. We will adjourn to closed session. We'll report back when we're done.